listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome in, coming to you live from the Fox Sports Radio studios, brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com, get yourself a free rate quote. Do it now. This is the Jason Martin Show, bonus edition, in for the Jonas Knox Show. The whole show is in for the whole show. Jonas doing excellent work elsewhere. He'll be back next week. My show is usually Sunday mornings. You will hear it again tomorrow, 1 hour later, but then you'll hear it for 3 hours. I'm Jason Martin. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. I reside here in Nashville, Tennessee, in the Music City. The crew out in Los Angeles spinning the dials radio style for me will make me sound far better than I would otherwise. If you want to join the program, you can. 877-996-6369, or you can tweet me at JMartZone. DM's wide open as well. One of the main reasons I'm blessed beyond measure, all reasonable and otherwise. Hope you recognize that you are as well. That's a conversation I will have with you anytime, any place. That's why my DMs are open at JMartZone. So that was quite a game. And there were so many storylines from it. And we have so many hours, the next four, as a matter of fact, to break this thing down. Toronto gets it done, mainly because of the quarter that's been the murderer's row for Golden State throughout much of their run over this last handful of years. The third, for the second straight game, the Toronto Raptors scored at least 35 points in the third quarter. Just bludgeoned the Warriors. And you knew that this was going to be trouble for Golden State when Toronto could not hit the broadside of a barn, with the exception of Kawhi Leonard in the first half, and they found themselves down a whopping 4 points at halftime. That felt like such a victory for Toronto. They looked like they should have been getting beaten by about 15, and they were totally in it. And then they came out, just beat down Golden State in the third quarter, and then held on. And Kawhi was just magnificent in this game. And I'm going to lay out a case that I've laid out on my program in its usual time slot on Sundays early morning here on Fox Sports Radio about Kawhi Leonard here momentarily. But we've got a little bit of audio from the game itself in case you missed some of it. Here is Toronto. Here's the final call from the Raptors radio network as they discuss this franchise's first ever chance to win a championship in the NBA.
And the Toronto Raptors head home, a chance to win the title in Canada for the first time in franchise history, for the first time in NBA history.
Boy, was everyone wrong that going ahead and shipping DeMar DeRozan out and bringing in Kawhi Leonard for what was expected to be and may still be just a one-year mercenary-style rental. Can you imagine if you get a dude for 1 year? All right, let's just see what we can do. Let's go get Kawhi. Let's see what we can do. Everything falls your way. He gets you home with the most ridiculous bounce because he has the softest touch on his jump shot in the NBA. Hits the first ever buzzer beater in the history of a Game 7 in 135 Game 7s in NBA history. This dude comes in, and he does absolutely everything you need. He makes everybody better around him. He gives them confidence, and all of a sudden, they emerge and start playing a lot better basketball for you, get you through maybe the deepest team in the league in Milwaukee. And then Golden State, without Kevin Durant, just seems not to have enough. 1 year. That's all you were guaranteed with him. This may not be a Paul George situation where he decides to stay in Oklahoma City. He may be headed to L.A. He might be a Clipper. Who knows where he could end up? I have a take on that a little bit later on in this program. But if you get him for a year and you win a Larry O'Brien trophy, good Lord, that has to be one of the great moves of all time in any team sport. 12 months in a championship, you'll take that all day long. Pascal Siakam sticks around. He becomes your star. If Kawhi leaves, you're able to go get somebody else. You've still got some other guys who now have championship experience behind them. That's invaluable. That's incredible, as a matter of fact. And another guy that has emerged that was much, much maligned, and deservedly so, because of his level of inconsistent play year after year for this franchise, but an all-star level player who's really good, is Kyle Lowry. And Lowry has really played well over this past couple of series. He has been there when Kawhi has needed him most. Here is what Kyle Lowry had to say after the game, talking about learning from not being able to close the deal in game two.
They're a really good third quarter team, and Kawhi came out, made two back-to-back threes and kind of got us jump-started a little bit. You know, we know what happened at game two, and, you know, that was a big part of, you know, what we our learning process, and every game is going to be different.
It's right. It was a four-point lead, and then all of a sudden the Raptors were up two, and then they were off, and man, Golden State didn't just lose. They lost to those uniforms. Like, I know there are a whole lot bigger fish to fry and many more important things to discuss than this, but those uniforms are putrid. You've got a lot of good Raptors throwbacks, the ones that T-Mac and Vince Carter were wearing when Carter won the dunk contest, even the ones with the animated dinosaur on it, which may have been hideous at the time. These things are all-time bad.
Garbage.
They don't make you think, yes, garbage is the exact right. That is exactly right. They are trash. And they beat you on the road. And my buddy from the big league, Bobby Burak, tweeted me last night in response to my comment about the uniforms and said, man, and it even looks worse on this Oracle Arena floor. That might be the last time you see that Oracle Arena floor. They may not make it back there. Toronto may finish this thing in five. Kevin Durant now becomes Obi-Wan Kenobi for the Golden State Warriors. He is their only hope. And if he comes back, are they rushing him back? And what do you get? 50 or 60%? He's got to shake off rust. He's got no time to shake off rust. If he shakes off the rust, they're done. But the thing about this is, they're done anyway. I know you can technically come back from 3-1. I know how great this team is. Kawhi Leonard ain't going out like that. Kawhi Leonard, I made the argument on the Jason Martin show a couple of weeks ago that he is John Wick. And I made this towards the end of the Milwaukee Bucks series when it looked like he was banged up and hurt, but you still could not kill him. He might be falling out of that SUV, but he was still going to shoot you in the face. And he was going to do so without saying a whole heck of a lot. He might say buckets or layup, but that would be about all. Even when he's talking to Doris Burke, he doesn't seem like he really wants to speak. Then I was thinking about this week they talked about the whole claw logo thing with Nike and this logo that's been developed for Kawhi Leonard, and they're calling him the claw. And I don't know why the nerd in me popped out and immediately started thinking of the old Inspector Gadget cartoon with Dr. Claw. And I'm not talking about Matthew Broderick. We're not discussing that Inspector Gadget. We're talking about the old one with Penny and Brain and the whole deal. We never saw Dr. Claw's face. He didn't speak all that much. He would get mad when Mad Cat tried to sing. He was a man of few words who wanted to destroy people. That's what I'm talking about. I like it, folks. Getting into the background. Kawhi Leonard might actually be the Dr. Claw of the NBA. Kawhi Leonard don't say a whole hell of a lot. He just absolutely mauls fools. And it doesn't matter how many gadget plays you got. Go-go gadget Curry. Go-go gadget Clay. Go-go gadget Draymond. Go-go gadget doesn't matter. This cartoon does not have a happy ending if you're a Golden State fan. Kawhi Leonard has no time for your BS. He's just out here killing people. And he had an incredible performance. In the first quarter of this game, to say that the rest of the Raptors could not shoot would be a massive understatement. If you saw what Steph Curry had to do in Game 3, Kawhi Leonard basically was the other half of the Spider-Man gif as they were pointing at each other in this one. He had 14 of the 17 first quarter points for the Toronto Raptors, just like Steph had 17 and nobody else could score for Golden State in Game 3. He kept them in it. They could not shoot. They were like 1 for 13 from 3. Like I said, they find themselves just down 4 at the half. And then in the third quarter, they start to wake up around him. And Golden State looks exhausted. But Kawhi was not going to let them lose. He's hitting step backs, he's hitting fallaways, he's making free throws, he's stealing the ball. And speaking of stealing the ball, DeMarcus Cousins in the first minute of this game turned the ball over twice. I know it's a dad joke to say this, but I tweeted out from @JMartZone that Boogie looked like he was just one of my cousins playing. I don't need the laugh track underneath this. It's just as bad. I know it's bad. I'm well aware of how terrible that is. That line is. But yes, loser horns effective. I'll take it. Game two, DeMarcus Cousins was good. That's all his body had. That doesn't mean for the rest of his career. He's not done, but he looks like he's a 60-year-old athlete that doesn't know when to quit, that his mind still knows how to do it, but his body just can't do it anymore. He needs an offseason. He gave everything he had left. He could barely walk, it seemed like, in game three. He was lumbering up the floor in game four as if he had no knees at all, like he was eventually going to be crawling through a war zone to get this thing home. They had to get him off the floor. He was a liability on offense as well as defense. He was trying to catch the ball with fists, not open hands. He's stumbling all over the place. The Warriors are stumbling all over the place. Steph gave everything he had in game three, including about 75% of what he needed to still have in game four, and they lost. I was watching that thinking they're not coming back to win in game three. Steve, get Curry on the bench. This dude's either going to get himself hurt or he's going to take himself out of what's coming up for you next. And if he's not available in full speed in game four, then what do you have? I saw him dive into Kyle Lowry trying to get a loose ball late in game three. I appreciate that effort. It was amazing. They weren't going to win that game with the way the Raptors were shooting. 53% from the field, 44 from three, and 95.2 from the free throw line. It was absurd. They missed one free throw in the game. Everybody's hitting threes. Danny Green put on a San Antonio jersey alongside Kawhi. Just started burying threes. Van Vliet only had 11, but his defense was outrageous. Lowry made everything he touched. This was not a night where look, I think Curry could have scored 67. They still would have lost the game. It's a miracle they only lost by 14. And I think that what we are learning, and we'll take a break on this and come back and discuss it on the other side, is a lot of folks in the media, and I am included in this, now need to admit, yeah, you know what? After all, I think the Warriors might have needed Kevin Durant to win this championship after all.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm Kevin Durant if I want to come back and do this. Because I know I'm not 100%. And at this point, I could just sit back with my arms folded, watch them lose, and then leave town. Or maybe stay around because now I'm going to be appreciated because it might be time to start erasing the asterisks from the championships that he's already won. I am nothing if not fallible, folks. Charles Barkley says it best. Only God is an expert. Nobody else is. And so if my position needs to evolve and I need to say, well, if I screwed that one up, then I'm certainly willing to do that. And I might have to do it when we come back. What are your thoughts on game four as the Raptors win 105-92, one win away from that city's first championship since Joe Carter beat my Atlanta Braves in 92? And if you're Kawhi, boy, oh boy. I really want that guy to stay in Toronto, and I will explain that as well. There's so much to get to tonight. If you want to join me, it's 877-996-6369. That's 877-99 on Fox, or you can tweet me at JMartZone. Off and running here on a special edition of the Jason Martin Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Welcome back to Fox Sports Radio and the Geico Fox Sports Radio Studios. Jason Martin Show, bonus edition tonight. That's Jonas Knox, hard-working guy, getting the late night off. We're brought to you by Discover. Discover alerts you if they find your social security information on any one of thousands of risky websites. That's a free benefit for card members. Just sign up online. The website is discover.com/free alerts. Limitations. Well, they do apply, as you know. I am Jason Martin. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. The telephone number is 877-996-6369. I want to talk about Kevin Durant, but I'm not done talking about Kawhi Leonard. And yeah, if you missed the first segment, I compared Kawhi Leonard, the Claw, to Inspector Gadget's Dr. Claw. That is a thing that happened for real on this radio program nationwide. And ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say, I actually get a paycheck to come up with things like that. And I came up with it on the fly, and I feel like we're either all better for it or all much worse for it. There you go. Pay the man. Kawhi Leonard. This is not new if you have listened to me for any length of time over the past month and a half or so. since this has become sort of something I can defend and believe is absolutely a fact. It just sort of dawned on me watching this postseason. My narrative continues to be, who do you trust? And who you trust most generally is going to get you home when you get to the postseason in a team sport. Who did you trust most in the NFL playoffs? If you're honest with yourself, even though they may not have had all the skill talent of the Chiefs, and you're starting to begin to trust the Chiefs because of Mahomes, and you like Kelce, and you know what they're capable of doing, but the Rams had never been there before. Who did you trust? You trusted Tom Brady. You trusted Bill Belichick. And when it came, and you know what? You trusted Julian Edelman. And when it came down to it, those guys did enough to win that Super Bowl, and the Rams did not. Giannis is about to win the NBA MVP on the 24th of this month, here in just a couple of weeks. But even though I picked Milwaukee because I thought they were the better team, I also argued before I did that that the guy I trusted the most in the series was Kawhi, because he had won an NBA championship, had beaten LeBron to do it, and was a Finals MVP along the way. And then I said, but a lot of the other guys, his teammates, they're going to bring him down because they're the opposite of guys you can trust in the postseason. I made the right case and then went the wrong way. Who did I trust most? Kawhi. That was my entire plot line. And then I screwed it up in the season finale. I should have picked the Raptors. When it was 2-2, I knew Toronto was going to win. Well, here we are with Kawhi Leonard again, and here is the truth. Kawhi Leonard, in 2019, during this postseason, has proven to be the best overall player in the NBA. I know. Even Kawhi doesn't believe it. Actually, I think he does. When I said this, every time I say it, I get the same responses, and I got them tonight at JMard Zone. And you're entitled to your own opinion. It is not a prerequisite to agree with me. Might be smarter if you do. Just kidding. A lot of you guys teach me a lot of things on a day-to-day basis. I enjoy the debate. But don't tell me it's LeBron James, not in 2019. I'm not saying Kawhi's better than LeBron at his prime. I'm saying that LeBron right now doesn't play defense because he knows I've got to score for the Lakers. He knew he had to score in his final couple of years for the Cavaliers. So his defense began to trail off because as he's gotten older, he's got to balance where he's going to use his energy on the offense and the defensive end. And nights he's going to have to take off, load management. Kawhi even talked about load management after the game and said that's been the key to him having the stamina that he's had so far in the postseason is some of the nights off he got during the regular season. And that dude has been banged up and hurt during the playoffs as well. That's a rough schedule we're starting to find out. A lot of guys are huffing and puffing their way to the finish line. But LeBron's not a better player in 2019 than Kawhi Leonard. I'm sorry. Kawhi is not just a good defender. He is an elite, all-time elite defender. Do you know what the stats were for the Golden State Warriors tonight against Kawhi as the primary defender? 2-for-7, 0-for-2 on threes.
Wow.
You do not score against that guy consistently. Or if you do, it takes everything you have. And then on the offensive end, coming out of San Diego State, all you thought you were going to get from Kawhi Leonard in the NBA was, all right, he can play a little defense and he's going to rebound like crazy. Then he comes into the NBA and you hear stories now about how all this dude did was watch YouTube videos of Michael Jordan. That's it. No one really knew him. Not even his own teammates knew him at San Diego State. He kept to himself. He's a different cat. Just like I said, Dr. Claw didn't say much. He was plotting. Kawhi's been plotting. He watched the best player in the history of the game. And right now, as you're watching him, he is putting a team on his back when he has to. And then that team is actually starting to stand up at times and make their own hay. You know, 48 points in one of those games the bench got against Milwaukee in the last series. Van Vliet has really come around, and his perimeter defense has been exquisite. Lowry is starting to play, well, like Lowry should be playing in the playoffs. When you got DeRozan away from him, it seemed like those two guys were just not good for one another, even if they're great friends. One of them had to go. And maybe there's more to talk about when it comes to DeRozan. But Kawhi's offense has come around. He had 36. He made everything he touched. He was incredibly efficient tonight. If you need him to get 40, he'll get you 40. He can pretty much effortlessly get you 25. And he's going to fill up the stat sheet in other ways. It's going to be impossible to shoot against him. You're going to tell me, well, Kevin Durant's better. Kevin Durant's the only guy that I will listen to in that argument. It's one of those two guys, the best player in the league, because both of them are really hard to defend. Kevin Durant has the most indefensible shot in the history of the NBA outside of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's skyhook. The skyhook could not be defended because at the height of the jump, which is where Kareem would let that go, no one had arms long enough. This is back to Inspector Gadget. Unless you're Inspector Gadget, go Gadget arms, that shot was not going to be blocked. Kevin Durant, at his height, with his wingspan, his jumper, same difference. How many times do you ever see that dude get blocked on a jump shot? Pretty much never, because he is taller than whoever it is at the top of his apex. And when he lets the ball go, your fingertips just aren't going to graze it. He's going to get that thing off. So you add to that defense that he only showed flashes of in Oklahoma City. As he's committed to it, he is a very good defender. He is not, however, on Kawhi Leonard's level, in my opinion, as a defender, which is why I say Kawhi's the best player. Because, and I had a caller call me last week, or 2 weeks ago, rather, and tell me, hey, stop saying, people need to stop saying that Kawhi's the best two-way player in the league. Because that seems like a slight. Well, no, it doesn't. The reason he's the best player in the league, and this is what I told that caller, the reason why I say he's the best player in the league is because he's the best player on both sides of the floor. He's the best offensive player and the best defender. It's unbelievable to watch all the tools in this guy's toolbox. He can shoot. He's good at the line. He is all-time great as a defender. He rebounds. He's smart. His IQ is smart. He's not a selfish player unless he has to be. Game 7 against the Philadelphia 76ers. Nobody wearing a Raptors uniform wanted any part of a shot. So Kawhi had to step up and do what he did. Wasn't an efficient night for him, but he scored everything he had to, including the game winner. He does what it takes. He is a killer. He is, as I compared him to John Wick in the first film, when John Wick is compared not to the boogeyman, but the guy that you hire to go kill the boogeyman. Well, who is the boogeyman if not the Golden State Warriors or LeBron James, who has killed both of them at different times on a basketball court? The Executioner, Dr. Claw, The Claw, Kawhi Leonard, the best player in the NBA. And he's now one game away, along with the Toronto Raptors, from maybe ending the Golden State dynasty? We don't know, because we don't know what's going to happen in free agency. Is Klay Thompson going to be back? Is Kevin Durant going to go east? Or is he going to stay put if Golden State leaves? Stephen A. Smith has said that his sources tell him if Golden State loses, he stays. If they win, he leaves. I've seen Kevin Durant leave after losses. I saw it in Oklahoma City. They had the Warriors down 3-1, couldn't finish the job, and he went and joined a 73-win team and then won a couple of championships. The question is, does he now start to feel more vindicated about his importance, and do the rest of us start to give him more credit than maybe we have over the past couple of years, watching how Golden State has simply not had enough to get through this Toronto Raptors team? They do not have the depth that they had a handful of years ago, and they're older. Iguodala is like 70 years old at this point. He can barely move. He's still a great defensive player. We can stop with the Hall of Fame comparisons for Andre Iguodala. My litmus test is the same as some other folks, colleagues in this business. When you say, name Hall of Fame, if I don't immediately say yes, that guy's not a Hall of Famer. I don't believe in, oh, I'll let him in on the eighth ballot. No. You're a Hall of Famer or you're not. It should be the elite of the elite. There are a whole lot of really good people and good players in the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, whatever it is. A whole lot of really good, but really good doesn't necessarily mean Hall of Fame. Andre Iguodala is an incredible player. One of the tests for Iguodala would be, was he ever the best player on his own team? The answer is yes. In Philadelphia, he absolutely was. And he was a great scorer at one point in his career. No longer is he. But he's been better since he's been more of, you know, the fourth or fifth best player in that lineup for Golden State. And he has graciously accepted that role, and he's been a large part in those championships. But is Horace Grant a Hall of Famer in your eyes? Maybe you would say borderline, but that's kind of what we're talking about. Is Richard Jefferson a Hall of Famer in your eyes? That's kind of what we're looking at here. We're looking at this Hall of Very Good versus the Hall of Fame for Andre Iguodala. But KD's going to have a decision to make. And I continue to wonder, even though we keep seeing these videos of him shaking hands and slapping hands with the team after these last couple of losses, or even after Game 2 after the win, what's really running through Kevin Durant's mind watching Golden State go through this level of futility, and seemingly they are realizing they need Kevin Durant? Does he want to see this thing end in 5 so that everything that people have said about him over the past couple of years all of a sudden comes crashing down? Because we are nothing in sports media if not hot take artists who will jump on the bandwagon to whatever the next hot take is. And the next hot take is going to be that Kevin Durant deserves all the credit for those championships. And you know who's overrated? And you will not hear me say this, but this is what's coming. You can believe this. Steph Curry's overrated. I'm telling you right now, you're going to hear that all next week. Right now, let's send it out to L.A. and find out the latest in the world of sports. Take it away.
All right, Jason, the defending champs are on the brink of elimination, as you were mentioning a second ago. They suffer a 105-92 loss to the Toronto Raptors. Kawhi Leonard, 36 points, leading the Raptors. Serge Ibaka had 20 points off the bench. GSW Hoops committed 17 turnovers. They missed 7 free throws in the loss. They now face a 3-1 series deficit as the series shifts back to Toronto, where the Raptors can clinch their first title in franchise history with a win in Game 5 on Monday. Online car shopping can be confusing. Not anymore with True Price from True Car. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car, so visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. And baseball, Clayton Kershaw lost the game for the first time since last July. The Giants beat the Dodgers 2-1. Fernando Tatis Jr. had 3 hits and a home run. It was just his second game back for the Padres. They would beat the Nationals 5-4. Seattle hammered the Angels 6-2. Astros with a walk-off win over Baltimore. Dan Plesac's nephew, Zach, shutting down the Yankees. Cleveland gets a 5-2 victory there. Women's World Cup coverage continues on FS1 Saturday as Germany takes on China. That will be followed by a doubleheader on Fox as Spain faces South Africa and Norway faces Nigeria. Coverage begins at 9 a.m. Eastern. Back to Jason Martin.
Thank you, Kevin Figures. Welcome back to the Fox Sports Radio studios. We're brought to you by Geico. It's easy to save 15% or more on car insurance with Geico. You can go to the website, that's geico.com, or you can call the phone number. It's 800-947-AUTO. The only hard part, figuring out which way is easier. Jason Martin Show here on a bonus night. I'm Jason Martin on Twitter, at JMartZone. So here is, as I said, Kawhi to me is the best player in the league. I think he's proven that. It was him and Durant sort of neck and neck to who was playing best in the playoffs. But I have suggested that I think if you put Durant on the Raptors, they're not as far as they are with Kawhi, because I feel like you play better around Kawhi Leonard than you do Kevin Durant, because I saw this act in Oklahoma City, even with Russell Westbrook there too. Let's not remember, there was an NBA Finals roster for the Oklahoma City Thunder that lost in 5 to Miami, that contained not just Kevin Durant, not just Russell Westbrook, but also James Harden, one of the two MVP frontrunners this year. And Serge Ibaka, who had 20 points tonight, or last night rather, for Toronto. That team was absolutely jacked with talent. But much of Oklahoma State's or Oklahoma City's futility has come from people standing around and watching Kevin Durant, and also watching Russell Westbrook. And now there's still a lot of watching Russell Westbrook, even though Paul George has emerged as maybe the best player on that team. And Golden State, you talk about all this ball movement that they have now. One of the reasons is because Steph's the only guy that can get his own shot now, so they have to move the ball around. Kevin Durant can just hold it, and he's going to post up, or he's going to spot up and shoot over the top of people, which leads to this one-on-five hero ball or this isolation ball. Kevin Durant is capable of doing it because he's the kind of next generation of George Gervin, as prolific a scorer as you will see, especially at his height and size. He even has an advantage over Harden, even though Harden may be a better offensive player in terms of what he's capable of doing. Durant is a unicorn out there. But it's Durant or it's Kawhi Leonard? Because here's the question you need to ask yourself when you think about, okay, who's the best player in the NBA? If you were starting an NBA franchise today and you had the pick of the litter in 2019 of everybody in the league, who would you start your team with? I think there are some of you that might say Giannis. I think you'd be wrong because there's still some flaws in his game that need to be remedied first. Nobody's saying James Harden, if for no other reason than it seems like a lot of people don't want to play with him. And he can wear out his welcome really quickly. I think the same thing's probably true of Russell Westbrook. LeBron in 2019, you might try to talk yourself into that, but you're begging at this point. Nobody's saying Kyrie Irving. We'll talk about the Nets and Kyrie later on in this program. Keep the list going. Dame, no. I don't even know if I'm overlooking anybody right now. But there are two real answers here. Kevin Durant. And my guy, Kawhi Leonard. And when I look at the two of them, I see one guy that is a better defender. And if you take the balance of offense and defense between the two guys, I'm going to take Kawhi. Because I think the cumulative total of those two numbers is going to be a little bit higher for Kawhi. And I have seen teammates rally around him as he makes them better. And as he does not necessarily have to play hero ball unless they force him to. Durant will play hero ball first. Kawhi will do it as a last resort when they need him most. When they needed him, they were 1 for 13 in the first quarter last night. What'd he do? 14 points. Came out after the half, hit back-to-back threes on possessions. A four-point deficit turned into a two-point lead. And the Raptors were off to the races. That, to me, is your argument. If you want to argue somebody else to me, then put it through that test. If you were starting a franchise, who are you starting it with in 2019? I'm taking Kawhi, even if he is Dr. Claw and doesn't have a whole lot to say. Even if he's just going after Inspector Gadget, or in this case, the Golden State Warriors, or whoever is out there trying to take him down. In the John Wick comparison, all these teams have been out here trying to collect paper on Kawhi Leonard. They're trying to get those millions on that bounty now that he's excommunicado, and they cannot do it. And now his teammates are rallying around him a little bit. He's got Willem Dafoe out here helping him handle his business. And as an overall talent, what exactly is the flaw in his game? What don't you like about Kawhi Leonard's game? The only thing is just he's more Mike Trout than he is some transcendent superstar in terms of a marketing standpoint. So if you want to argue, all right, well, if I'm starting a franchise, I want to start one that it's going to have a superstar that I can make money with. Okay, maybe you can argue me somebody else there. But if you're talking about the best player, it's Kawhi. And just like every other non-scripted sport, you can't necessarily pick who your superstar is going to be. You're not always going to get lucky enough that LeBron's your best player, and he's also somebody that's outspoken that has a great personality. You talk about Mike Trout. Mike Trout just wants to play ball. Seems to be a really good dude. Just wants to play ball. Just wanted to play and stay in Anaheim, where nobody's paying attention, and a whole lot of people have never seen him play because his games are late at night and the Angels are never close to contention. Sometimes you get lucky, and it's Michael Jordan, even though he never said anything. Just his activity and the way that you could market him and his smile and whatever else and Space Jam and all of those things followed around. I don't see Kawhi Leonard doing Space Jam. They're still going with LeBron James in that. But if you're really starting a franchise, the question needs to be who's going to win for you. And the answer to that is Kawhi Leonard. And they are about to win the NBA championship. We'll be right back. Jason Martin Show in for the Jonas Knox Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Final segment, hour number one, Jason Martin Show. Happy Saturday to you. Another good comparison for Kawhi Leonard. Clint Eastwood. Little gorillas for you. Chris Perfett spinning the hits. We're brought to you by Discover. They're a hit. They alert you if they find your social security number on any one of thousands of risky websites. That's a free benefit for card members. Sign up online at discover.com/free alerts. Limitations apply. Let me tell you what you're going to start to hear again, because look, this is when lazy radio comes out. This is when people are searching for content and they are trying to find something that's going to move the needle or it's going to cause a bunch of phone calls. They might not even believe it, but they can talk themselves into it. Steph Curry had 47 points in Game 3. Gave it his all. I said off the top of this show tonight, I felt like he gave about 50% of what he needed tonight, too. He gave 150 and just didn't have all that much left, especially defensively where he's already sort of a liability, which is why when you say he's the second-best point guard of all time, you can make the argument, but you can also argue against it because he just can't play defense. And so you can look at a lot of other guys like your Stocktons or your Isaiah Thomases, guys that were dogs in a completely different era that had to do it on both ends, that also had size issues or things going against them, and played at a high level. But what you are about to hear, because they want your phone calls and they want your tweets and they want all of this stuff because there's a whole lot of time to fill. And I'm not saying it's going to happen on Fox Sports Radio, but you are going to hear it. Is that Steph Curry, based on what we've seen in the NBA Finals, Steph Curry is overrated.
Stop it.
Steph Curry could not do it alone. You see, Kevin Durant's the real player here. And look, I've already said, Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard are the two best players in the league. I would flip it and say Kawhi is number one, which I've made that case already tonight. But my argument continues to be, who exactly could do it alone? And who exactly has done it alone in the NBA? You usually need multiple Hall of Famers to win championships. And yes, you can argue Klay is a Hall of Famer and Draymond is a Hall of Famer. Durant is definitely a Hall of Famer, but he's not out there right now. And Curry, of course, is a Hall of Famer. But you also generally need multiple Hall of Famers and get their own shot, or you need to be transcendent on both sides of the floor. Michael Jordan was a fantastic defender and a great offensive player. LeBron in his prime, exactly the same thing. Kobe had Shaq, then he had Powell. Great player, not saying he's not. Dirk, maybe you could say Dirk did it. Maybe Dirk did it alone. But he got some great contributions from role players, and he played out of his gourd during that postseason. And he's all-time great. Dwayne Wade? He had Shaq. It wasn't the best version of Shaq, but he had Shaq on that team. And then, of course, he had LeBron and Chris Bosh and that crew. Boston, Bird, all-time great. Had McHale, had Parrish, had Dennis Johnson. Had a great coach as well in Jones. It's just that way. So when you look at Steph Curry and you say, well, Steph couldn't do it alone, he's overrated. I don't know who could with the roster that they had out there in Game 3 or tonight. Look, Klay was moving a lot better tonight than I thought. I felt like they had a luxury because Toronto didn't close the deal in Game 2 as they should have. So, yeah, be careful with Klay Thompson so that you don't potentially knock him out of the rest of the series by making the hamstring injury worse. Then I watched how he moved tonight, and I'm like, man, maybe they could have played him in Game 3. I don't know. He can't get his own shot either. But the biggest thing that you lost with Klay Thompson in Game 3 was defense, because then Draymond had to sit there on Kawhi Leonard all night, and that left everybody else wide open. It totally threw off the rest of the defense. Draymond had a bad game, but Danny Green's wide open all night long. Kyle Lowry's open all night long. Siakam's kind of getting what he wants, because you really need Draymond on Siakam and Klay Thompson working on Kawhi, or those two guys switching off and playing on those two gentlemen at different times of the night. The shots were harder to come by, especially in that first half for Toronto. The defense was much better from Golden State tonight than it was in Game 3. So that's what you lost. But you can stop, and like I said, you're going to hear it. If you need the argument against it, the argument's real simple. All right, sports radio host guy or hot take guy, who exactly would have won that game in Steph Curry's place? I had one person argue with me and say, well, Jordan would have won that game. I mean, maybe. Steph had 47. Jordan would have played better defense, but I don't know if he would have had 47 and had to play that level of defense. maybe everybody else would have picked it up around him. If anybody could have done it, it would have been him. I don't think LeBron could have done it. I don't know anybody who could have done it. But then you watch tonight and Steph didn't play well. Steph was exhausted. He played 43 minutes tonight. He played a ridiculous level of energy in Game 3 and just didn't have a whole lot left. But you are about to hear Steph Curry's overrated takes. You're about to hear his name dropped on the point guard list. And now the old adage about his defense is going to be talked about when you have not heard a whole lot of that when the Warriors were winning games. Beware the takes that emerge when things start to change, as opposed to ones that actually stick. It's okay to change as long as you admit that you're changing. But just watch. Mark my words. Steph Curry is overrated. You're about to hear that all over the place, but you will not hear it here. Jason Martin Show, hour number two, comes up next here on Fox Sports Radio. Hour number two here on Fox Sports Radio, coming to you live from the Fox Sports Radio studios. We're brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. I am Jason Martin. This is the Jason Martin Show, replacing the Jonas Knox Show for 1 week. Appreciate the opportunity as always. I'm blessed beyond measure. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. If you want to reach us for any reason, 877-996-6369. That's 877-99 on Fox. Man, do I want to hit this story or not? This Mark Stevens story, the minority investor that has been suspended for a year for making contact with Kyle Lowry in Game 3, was a story yesterday and was still being talked about today. Some clamoring that he should be banned for life, that he should have to divest and sell off. And that actually, I think, is probably what's going to happen behind the scenes. That won't be done publicly, but they will quietly ask him to exit stage left. The hook will come out from the clown and they will pull him off stage. When I watched this, it did not seem like it was a huge deal. It wasn't like some kind of giant shove. It was a clear shove, and Lowry didn't make contact with him. It was the guy next to him, and he took the opportunity to shove the opposing player a little bit. It wasn't like an egregious shove, but you can't make contact. You have, at that point, surrendered your right to courtside seats. And it seems amazing to me that these kinds of things don't happen more. And we had a couple of different fan incidents happen this year. Remember Russell Westbrook and the Utah Jazz? There have been a couple of different things like this. But being this close to the floor is so nuts to me. I remember I was at Firestone in Akron a few years ago, and Tiger Woods was playing. And I was like 5 feet from Tiger Woods for 18 holes. Just followed him around and watched him play. Wanted that as part of my sports fandom. He's my favorite athlete of all time, even with all the problems. And I couldn't believe how close I got to him, because I was thinking to myself, you're telling me that there's not one knucklehead out there who has not taken some kind of major shot at a golfer, because you could touch those guys. They're so close to you. I mean, you've got that little rope, but they're usually right there. Like, I had no idea I was going to be that close to pro golfers, or that I could have access that close to pro golfers. And yeah, I know galleries are generally, I mean, there's some numbskulls out there who are chanting in backswings and doing stupid stuff like that and screaming potato chips after drives. But even well-behaved, all it takes is one guy, and you don't know who's well-behaved or not. I might look well-behaved and then come in there and do something real nefarious. There might be some serious skullduggery and chicanery going on around me and what I might have planned. But nothing's ever really happened. And outside of the Malice in the Palace, we haven't really seen anything happen in the NBA either, despite these courtside seats. But here is my argument. I know that the NBA liked this, and then we'll play some audio from Adam Silver reacting to this story and why the league felt the need to discipline in the way that they did. Even if this was not a bad shove, this, even though the NBA benefited in terms of coverage from this Drake thing, this is the dark side of the Drake experiment. This is why Drake can't be making contact with people when he's on the floor. This is why he can't bump Draymond or rub even Nick Nurse's shoulders. I don't care if he's part of the team or he's an ambassador with the team. This dude's a minority owner. Doesn't have a ton of shares, but has shares with the Warriors. So there's still a tie to the team there as well. But when you let Drake touch somebody, what's the next step? Well, what happens if you touch somebody from the other team? There is a level of... there's a slippery slope here, which is why you should not be entitled to do this no matter what, because of the potential for escalation. Nobody should feel like just because they are where they are and they have that close of access, that that entitles them to do much of anything except watch the game. I'm stunned that we don't see more drinks and things like that spilled on the floor. I'm stunned that we don't have way more altercations than we do. So a credit to a lot of these fans that treat this with respect. But this guy gave up his right to have courtside seats at this point. At the very least. And I heard Eddie Garcia say that on Outkick a couple of days ago when he was asked about it. And he's right. I think that's a good thing. Yeah, put this guy up in the stands. But the league is going to do something about this, because at this point you have to set an example and you have to set some level of precedent that this ain't going to be tolerated in any respect. Some people, I think, have taken it a little bit too far, because this was not the Kennedy assassination and it wasn't even that big of a shove. But the fact that it was a shove at all is completely unacceptable. Here is NBA Commissioner Adam Silver talking about the decision from the NBA to discipline Mark Stevens.
Immediately after it happened at the game, both NBA and Warriors security interviewed Mr. Stevens to get his side of the story. We, of course, collected all the video and interviewed some of the people who were sitting nearby. We spoke to Kyle Lowry after the game, gathered the facts, and then I think the ultimate decision on the discipline came about over the course of today in discussions between the league office and the Warriors.
So you can look at this and say it really wasn't that bad a shove, but it was a shove. I hesitate to, and I heard Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy and Mike Breen do this during the broadcast, and I saw other people in the media saying this yesterday as well. All credit to Kyle Lowry for not retaliating and causing some kind of giant scene, that he handled this with all the class in the world. And I guess that's true that he didn't throw a punch, but I never saw this as becoming a Ron Artest in Indiana, Detroit situation here. Like, Lowry is a pretty classy dude, first of all. And again, this was a shove-ish. I'm not saying it's okay, and I'm not saying that this should be a slap on the wrist. This guy needs to know that this can't be done, and everybody else needs to know that this can't be done. But if you're going to go after Mark Stevens in this case, even though it's different because it's the opposing team and this was a gesture of at least mild aggression, then you've got to tell Drake, all right, enough. You can't do this. You want to make dumb Instagram videos like you did after game four tonight, go right ahead and cheer and dance and look like an idiot. And we know the cameras are going to be on you, and you know the cameras are going to be on you. But this whole, you know, massaging Nick Nurse's shoulders and some of the other things that you're doing, these histrionics, this is the logical next step from that. These are a whole lot of people. Stevens has a ton of money. We know that because he is an investor with the Golden State Warriors. Drake has a ton of money. We know because, well, he's Drake. People with money are not used to being told no very often. And so they live very entitled lives and do things that we would not even consider doing. If I'm courtside and Kyle Lowry crushes into the guy next to me, am I going to reach over and shove Kyle Lowry, even if it's with one finger? No, and not just because I think Kyle Lowry could kill me if he wanted to, because he's a pro athlete in elite shape, but just because I'm used to being told no in my life. I'm used to being told no by women. I'm used to being told no in jobs. I'm used to being told no by my parents. All of these kinds of things. But if you think about the lives that a lot of wealthy people live, they are surrounded by yes men that find a way to make it okay for whatever crazy activity it is that they find themselves engaged in at that moment. So if you want to do this with Mark Stevens, and I'm not saying you're wrong, to ban him for a year or to do whatever that you deem necessary to protect your league from the next step past this, which would be a real problem, then you also need to go back a step and say, all right, Drake, no more. And no more like this. We're not doing this. The Spike Lee stuff was different. Spike Lee never made contact with anybody. There always seemed to be good spirits in everything that Spike Lee did with Reggie Miller. There's a lot of trash talking, but that seemed fun. And I know we've gotten a long way away from it. Maybe we'll say the same thing about Drake later on. And when he's mocking Giannis's free throws, it might be annoying, but, I mean, Giannis airballed free throws in back-to-back games in that series. He airballed free throws. Whole lot more people not named Drake were mocking Giannis Antetokounmpo for airballing free throws. I get that side. But it's making contact with pro athletes as if you have the right to do so or the privilege to do so simply because you have courtside seats. That's where we've got problems. And that's where the NBA needs to be proactive. And I think that's why they are going to make the decision that they are. And I think that the discipline's not done. You may think, and you can call me at 877-996-6369. That's 877-99 on Fox. And tell me your side of this, or you can tweet me at JMartZone. But I think behind the scenes, either Golden State and other people associated with them are going to try to get this guy out, or the league is quietly going to say, dude, you can't be an owner anymore, and just try to keep him quiet and find a way to get him out of there. I don't think this thing is done. That might be an overreaction in your eyes. I think maybe getting him off the court is one thing. And remember, Oracle Arena, if Toronto finishes it in five, we've seen the last of Oracle Arena for the Golden State Warriors. They're about to move into the most beautiful building in all of pro sports. And that guy, for the whole first season, is not going to be allowed in that building to watch them play. The team that he has spent and owns shares of, you know, that franchise, he's not going to be able to do it because of this. That's a pretty substantial penalty. And because of that, I feel like we may have seen the last of him, period, in terms of his ownership or whatever you want to call it, in terms of the shares that he possesses as it relates to the Warriors franchise. But I'm telling you, I don't think that that shove happens if the Drake thing doesn't happen a couple of weeks before. And I know the Drake thing was fun, and it was pretty innocuous, and it was dumb because it was Drake, and ah, ha, 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 ha. And it was great publicity for the NBA at the time. But all it does is tell everybody at courtside that maybe they could do this if they have some level of money. Now, it takes a lot of money to sit courtside, period. But there are still a lot of regular folks or people that don't make a ton of money that just, hey, look, we've saved up for half a year, and this is the first time that Toronto's been here, so we're going to travel and we're going to go to this thing because who knows if we ever get back. But those folks are just going to sit there and eat their nachos and drink their Diet Cokes and enjoy the game with their kids. This guy is shoving a professional athlete who also makes millions of dollars. That can't be tolerated. And I do think that that is the progression. That is the slippery slope or the step upwards, escalation style, of what we saw with Drake. So we just got to cut this off. Just because you got courtside access doesn't mean we need to be touching pro athletes, folks. 877-99 on Fox. That's 877-996-6369. Back in a moment. Jason Martin Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Welcome back. Fox Sports Radio Studios brought to you by Geico. Jason Martin Show. In for the Jonas Knox Show. He'll be back next week, of course. My show is usually Sunday mornings, 3 to 6 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm Jason Martin. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. We're brought to you by Discover. Discover alerts you if they find your social security number on any one of thousands of risky websites. It's free for card members. Just sign up online at discover.com/free alerts. Limitations do apply. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk some NFL, Carson Wentz, marijuana in the league. There's several issues that are happening right now. Also, Le'Veon Bell saying he's going to jump back into being the best back in the league, and he's going to prove that again this year. We'll see. But let's stick with the NBA here, as that is the story. The Raptors on the doorstep of history for their franchise and for the country. And so let's talk about Kawhi. I know there's a lot of talk about, is Kevin Durant going to leave or stay? The reports are, and I don't think that these are things that you can take too seriously yet, because one, I don't know if he knows. If he does know, I think that it's him leaving. I've kind of thought he has known, but his agent saying that he doesn't know makes me still think, yeah, he probably knows he wants to leave. I don't think him and Draymond Green get along particularly well. But it does look like they need him right now to win a championship. But I want to talk about Kawhi Leonard in Toronto. Because the question is going to move to, is Kawhi going to stay or is Kawhi going to go? Is he going to go to L.A. and play for the Clippers? Is he going to stun and join a big-time super team? Is he going to stay in the East but go somewhere else? All the options are open for Kawhi Leonard. But, man, would I like to see him stay in Toronto. The NBA is a players' league more than it's a team league. Doesn't mean if you're listening to me out there, you don't have a favorite team in the NBA. But what I've discovered is I just seem to really enjoy a lot of players. And so it's hard to really kind of narrow yourself down to a team. You end up finding, okay, well, maybe I like this team. And usually that's not the way it is in sports. The NBA seems to be more of a players' league because the players are celebrities. But Kawhi Leonard has a unique opportunity in Toronto. And that is, he can become not just the face of a franchise or a city. He can become the athletic face of the entire country. Now, I know hockey is the national sport of Canada. But they also have a great fan base with these Raptors. And the whole country rallies around. I'm sure there might be some places that aren't Toronto fans, but most of Canada, I would imagine, are giant Raptors fans. That's the only franchise they have. And so Kawhi Leonard has the opportunity to be a national athlete in Canada. And of course, we all see him and we know how good he is. He's never going to be the most ebullient guy. He's never going to be the best with the media. He's just going to go out there and win games. I mean, his press conference, or not his press conference, what he said to Doris Burke after the game was unbelievable. And there was even a moment where, and I was reading this from Danny Chow at The Ringer, after he said what he said to Doris Burke, you can see him stop for a couple of seconds like, uh-oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Because what he said was, I don't play for the records. I don't play for the stats. I don't play for the fans. I play for wins. But after he said, I don't play for the fans, he kind of stammered there for a couple of seconds because he realized, oh, whoops. He is wired differently, ladies and gentlemen. But Toronto is perfect. And it's not because he can't play under pressure. He'd go to the Clippers and be fantastic there. I don't know of any situation he couldn't step in and make it better. Again, he's the best player in the NBA. Maybe I'll lay that case out again if you didn't hear the first hour of this program. It's him and Durant. Whichever one you want. I'll take Kawhi. And that's no disrespect at all to Kevin Durant. They're both fantastic. But if Kawhi stays in Toronto, I mean, if you go to the Clippers, look, I don't care if the Clippers win a championship. It's still a Lakers town, right? I can ask the guys out in L.A. I haven't talked to them yet, but I will be talking to them at some point during this program. It's always going to be a Lakers town. It always has been a Lakers town. Same thing as like going to Brooklyn. You know, Kyrie's going to go to Brooklyn. I mean, the Knicks are still the team in New York. Just like the Giants are, just like the Yankees are. Doesn't mean there aren't Mets fans and Jets fans and Nets fans. But those are secondary franchises. Clippers could win three championships in a row. The Lakers still have a ton of history, and they've got all these Hall of Famers. Kawhi could go carve his own, sure. But he's doing that in Toronto. That's the same argument I have with Dabo. I know that if Nick Saban leaves, that will be the one job you could see Dabo Swinney leaving for is Alabama. But why? I mean, I'd love to see him at Alabama as an Alabama fan, but that dude could get the entire city of Clemson, South Carolina. He'd get Anderson, South Carolina, renamed Swinney, South Carolina. There's something to be said for creating a Gonzaga if you're Mark Few and staying there. Or Gary Patterson staying at TCU. Or Mike Krzyzewski building Duke and not going to Indiana or UCLA or Kentucky. Duke didn't matter before he got there. Now it matters. Now Duke is a job that you would want. Maybe not directly after Coach K, but Duke has all this history behind it. Clemson is creating history behind it. Kawhi Leonard has an opportunity to make history unlike anyone ever has in the NBA in Toronto and make that franchise more of a destination location. They got rid of a guy in DeMar DeRozan that wanted to be there, which is something no one had up to that point. Bosch, he left. Other guys left. DeRozan wanted to be there, was an all-star player, but could not make threes and could not beat LeBron James, and they shipped him out of town, got Kawhi in the same year that LeBron left the East. And you hear DeMar DeRozan this week doing that sit-down interview where he talks about how he helped build everything. He's watching the Raptors now. He knows they would not be there without him. That it's interesting. He's pulling for him, but it's sort of crazy to watch this franchise that he helped build. And unfortunately, that's just kind of how it goes. Not just in sports, but in companies. Like, there are a lot of folks that build it up, and then they bring in a guy that's a closer to finish it off. You might be that great pitcher who gets eight innings, but to win that game, you got to get Mariano Rivera in there. So he's going to get that save. DeRozan was a good player, exchanged for an all-time great player. DeRozan's an all-star, exchanged for a Hall of Famer. And now Kawhi Leonard has the opportunity to stay in a great city with an awesome fan base, a coach in Nick Nurse that's starting to get a lot more respect. At first it was, well, Dwayne Casey's getting shipped out of town like it's his fault. He would be much better coaching this team than Nick Nurse would. Look, that could be true. He was coach of the year and got fired while he was coach of the year last year, did Dwayne Casey. It was him and DeRozan that kind of had to take the fall, and Lowry that was able to stick around. And Nick Nurse has the benefit of Kawhi, but a lot of the other guys that are back are part of this deal. I mean, Valanciunas, you got rid of him, but Van Vliet came up small last year in the playoffs. Lowry, of course, came up small in the playoffs, like DeRozan did, like all these other guys did. They made some good moves. Ajiri did a good job, and Nick Nurse has coached well. The other narrative, I told you about narratives that we're going to start to hear, hot takes you're going to start to hear about Steph Curry being overrated. It's coming. You're also about to hear Steve Kerr might be a little overrated too. And he's not either. This is not a good situation for the Warriors. It's a great situation for Kevin Durant because it is making his case. The Rockets, that was not a good case for Kevin Durant when he went out and they finished that series off. The Blazers was definitely not, although you could have argued they're probably not down 17, 18, and 17 in three consecutive games in the first half to Portland. If Kevin Durant is out there, Durant makes everything easier, but it changes the way Golden State has to play. But you can absolutely say, incontrovertibly, that the Raptors are nowhere without Kawhi Leonard right now. I know they were really good last year with DeRozan, but DeRozan can't make a consistent jump shot. That's what Leonard has done throughout this postseason to bail this team out and to give them offense when otherwise it was invisible. It was straight Casper the Friendly Ghost out there. So if you're Kawhi Leonard, do you want to go play for a secondary team in the LA Clippers? And a great coach and a Hall of Famer in Doc Rivers, who I think did the best coaching job of his entire career this past year. And some players that you like, Harrell off the bench, Lou Williams. I mean, they have some guys that you like, and I like their makeup, and I liked how hard that they played in that series against Golden State. But it's still going to be a Lakers town. Or do you just want to, and maybe he doesn't care about that, but if you want to go win games, won't you just stay in Toronto and keep on winning? I know the East is getting better, but Toronto, you can still get through the East easier than you can get through the West, I believe. There might be a little bit more of a balance of power shift, but there's still a lot of talent in the West. Kawhi knows right now, he's proven to us that he knows how to win in these situations with this group of guys. Now, maybe you lose a couple of them to free agency or somebody moves around and you have to make a couple of moves. But this team seems to have a pretty solid front office as well. But I think that the allure here, if I'm trying to sell Kawhi Leonard and I'm the Toronto Raptors organization, it is you become the athletic face of the country in a lot of respects because they don't have anybody else. And since Joe Carter, there are no champions. So if you stay there after winning a championship, and you don't have to sign for 10 years, you sign for a couple with some outs. You either cash in and stay there, or you can leave in a couple of years. Give yourself another crack at a couple of more rings there. You got guys around you that like playing with you from what it looks like. You make them a lot better. They seem to be a lot more confident because they know they can trust you as the alpha dog to get the job done, even when they're struggling, and eventually they're going to wake up. Bench was not good in the first couple of games against Milwaukee, woke up like crazy and played really well. Van Vliet had his child, came back and started playing out of his mind for you. But you've got a collection of guys you like. I think you've got a coach that you can coexist with. And Toronto's also a team where if you want to fly under the radar and be the best player in the world and still somehow be a secret to a lot of people, Toronto is a great place to do that. Kawhi Leonard and Toronto seem like a perfect mix. A really good fan base, not a huge NBA market, but a franchise where it adds some parity and it gives an all-time great player to the Eastern Conference. And with emerging superstars already over there, that's the case that you make. Stay in the East, Kawhi. Stay in Toronto. Be the hero for the country athletically. You just brought this country its first championship in over 20 years, in nearly 30 years. You know, whatever the number is. Toronto will never forget your name. There will be a statue of you outside the arena. I don't know what it is that drives Kawhi Leonard. I don't know exactly what he wants. I know he said he doesn't play for the fans, he doesn't play for the stats, he plays for the wins. Well, he can get a whole lot of wins, and they proved it this year with him in Toronto. And if they get one more win, and they've got, what? They've got three more cracks at it, all they need is one, and they're going to win a championship. The Toronto Raptors are going to be holding the Larry O'Brien after defeating the Golden State Warriors. Because they have the claw. We've got Kevin Figgers. Let's go out to Los Angeles right now. Catch up with the latest in the world of sports, including, of course, 105-92.
Yes, we'll start in the Bay Area. And Oakland fans in that city may have gotten their last taste of Warriors basketball at Oracle Arena. That's because the Raptors did notch that 105-92 victory, as you mentioned a second ago. Jason, Kawhi Leonard's 36 points and 12 rebounds leading the way. Pascal Siakam at 19. Serge Ibaka and Fred VanVleet provided the only scoring off of the Toronto bench. Ibaka at 20, VanVleet scoring 8. The Warriors did get 28 points from Klay Thompson in his return to the lineup, but Steph Curry made only 2 of 9 three-point attempts. The Warriors as a team made just 8 of 27 from deep. The series now shifts to Toronto for Game 5, where the Raptors can clinch their first title in franchise history. Online car shopping can be confusing. Not anymore with True Price from True Car. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car, so visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. In baseball, Kevin Pillar with an RBI single to help lift the Giants to a 2-1 win over the Dodgers. Robinson Chirinos with a walk-off hit for the Houston Astros as they beat Baltimore. Mike Soroka improved to 8-1. He lowered his ERA to 1.38 as the Braves dominated the Marlins 7-1. Cleveland over the Yankees 5-2. French Open action continues at 6 a.m. Eastern. Novak Djokovic and Dominic Thiem continue their match. That was a suspended in the third set on Friday due to rain. The winner faces Rafael Nadal in the final on Sunday. In the NFL, the Texans gave general manager Brandon Gain the boot, while the Jets hired former Eagles director of player personnel Joe Douglas as their new general manager. Back to Jason Martin.
Appreciate it, Kevin. Welcome back to the Fox Sports Radio studios, brought to you by Geico. It is easy to save 15% or more on car insurance with Geico. Go to geico.com or call 800-947-AUTO. The only hard part is figuring out which way is easier. I am the aforementioned J-Mart. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. 877-99 on Fox. That's 996-6369. That's how you join me, even though I did not tell them so. Open your mics, fellas, out in L.A., and tell me if I'm wrong in my assertion that Kawhi Leonard's the best player in the league. And if it's not him, it's got to be Durant, right? I mean, are you still going to argue LeBron or anybody else, or have I made a pretty compelling case here?
Well, for me, on both ends of the floor, it's hard to argue against Durant, especially with this playoff run he's having. I mean, he was already in the conversation coming into the postseason anyway with Kevin Durant, and I think Kevin Durant being out and the way that that Leonard is dominating at this point in time, it solidifies it for me.
Kevin, do you think anybody other than Kawhi would have Toronto in this position right now?
I don't think so. The way that he could dominate on both ends of the floor, and you brought it up yourself, even MJ, could he have played this well, this dominantly, if that's a word, on both ends of the court? Look, Kevin Durant improved defensively over the last couple of years, mm-hmm. but he's nowhere near the defender that Kawhi Leonard is when they both decide to turn it on. So for me, absolutely not. It's all Kawhi.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jordan probably could have won the game too, but I think you could start to argue that Kawhi Leonard is like a Scottie Pippen-level defender.
No doubt.
And that's about as high a praise as I can give.
Oh, yeah.
on the defensive end. I mean, again, the stat that stands out from game four, guys, two for seven when he was the primary defender was Golden State, 0 for 2 on threes, and those threes were not close. Speaking of not close, Draymond Green took a three from the corner near the end of the second quarter that hit the side of the backboard. That thing would have been straight up shacked in a fool. And I still miss the fact that these games aren't on TNT just so I have that crew, even though you did get them on NBA TV. Other fellas out there, what do you think about Kawhi Leonard as the best player in the league? Is that a hot take for me, or is that a take that makes some sense?
I think it makes sense to me. I mean, it's you look at the stuff he's doing, and it's just he's making a lot of the – I know there's a lot of people saying Steph's gassed and all this stuff, but it's just it's night and day when he's not on the floor. And I think a lot of – you got to point out Nick Nurse, too. I think he's really coached a really well series. They've talked a lot about Kawhi's load management getting him to this point. And, you know, it's just – it's weird to see Kerr and the Warriors as a whole kind of just kind of be outmatched in a lot of different aspects.
Yeah, Nick Nurse, now that he's not wearing the double N hat, the Nick Nurse branded, like, fitted flex fit that he got from, like, the cap embroiderer at the local mall, now I can give him some credit. That was only one day. It's okay. We all have mistakes. We all make mistakes. But Nick Nurse can't be a brand. But he is doing a very good job, and he's done a smart job in the way he's handling, especially Danny Green and Fred VanVleet. He's got VanVleet coming in to start in the third quarters of some of these games. When he sees guys that are not being efficient, he's made some switches. Steve Kerr deservedly gets a lot of credit, but Nurse, he does deserve some respect for the way that he has helped rally this team and given them kind of the proper motivation and put them in the right positions to succeed, to come back against Milwaukee after losing the first couple of games, and certainly what he's done against Golden State. So definitely some props to Nick Nurse. Chris, I don't know how big an NBA fan you are, but I can't talk boxing with you tonight. That was last week. But where are you on this Kawhi Leonard take?
I'm an NBA guy myself, too.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, grew up with the Pistons, what can I say? But, I mean, when it comes to it, I feel like on one hand, jumping in on Kawhi right now almost seems a bit spur of the moment. But then I remember what he did to, you know, I remember what he was with the Spurs, too. And it's kind of easy to forget that when he's playing regular season games up in Toronto and we're out here, you know, either on the West Coast or wherever you may be. But I think when it comes to it, it's easier for me to appreciate Kawhi's greatness because unlike with the Warriors, I mean, he's surrounded by some decent players, and Kyle Lowry is obviously his number two in kind of that classic mold, Pippen to Jordan or D-Wade to LeBron James with the Heat. So, but I see what, as you say, Lowry's the complete package. Leonard's the complete package. He's up and down the court. He's defending. He's making these shots. He's giving you production on both ends. And Durant, when it comes to it, I hate to make it anything off the court, but given what I know about Durant, when it comes to the burner accounts or anything else, I worry about what puts him back behind Kawhi for me is just that. It's the mental element. It's the fact that off the court he doesn't seem to really have his attitude together.
Yeah, Durant cares way too much about what people think. He doesn't just go out there and kill you on the basketball court like he could. He kills you and then he wants everybody to say how badly he killed him and that he's a perfect dude and all this kind of stuff. He leads the league in technical fouls. He's all up in his feelings. He's got a burner account like you mentioned, Chris. Kawhi Leonard could not possibly care less what you think of him.
We were talking here, too. I was talking with Eric here during a break, too. Like, he's learned from the best. He's definitely learned from the feet of Tim Duncan on how to just be completely boring.
That's fine.
But I mean, it's very much so someone who just does not seek to be in the light, who just wants to go out there and play basketball. And I mean, I like guys with flair a lot too. One of my favorite players is Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said of how Leonard goes about his ways, and he just lets his play speak for himself.
It's very Spurs-like. Popovich doesn't say a lot. Well, now he's said more politically, obviously, over the past few years. But you know, he's historically his sort of deals when he's talking on the sidelines to I guess, the late Craig Sager and whoever it was. And I think some of it was tongue-in-cheek, and I've heard he's a really good guy, but he didn't have a whole lot to say. Tim Duncan didn't have a whole lot to say. Manu didn't really ever have that much to say. Tony Parker didn't ever have that much to say. David Robinson was known for being classy. So Kawhi Leonard sat there in that franchise and learned what you learn, which is, yeah, we don't really say all that much. You know who else doesn't say a whole lot? Many New England Patriots. You know what all of them have in common, meaning the Spurs and the Patriots? Hardware, trophies, rings. And then they learned just how to go out there and do their job. And right now, nobody in the National Basketball Association is doing their job to the level Kawhi Leonard is. One more win for the Raptors. They dethrone the dynasty. Thanos takes down the Avengers. And the Raptors are NBA champions. That's all I need to say. Kawhi's the best player in the league. Durant, you can give him 1A. I'm good with that. He is tremendous. I'm taking nothing away from him other than the moniker of best player in the league. The two arguments are Durant and Kawhi, and Kawhi is an elite all-time defender. Durant can be a very good defender and has a length advantage. But if I'm starting a franchise, and I can start it with one guy, and those are my two choices, really, I wouldn't go with anybody else because there are flaws in everybody else. I'm taking Kawhi because I think you have a better chance that the collection of guys that you put around Kawhi are going to end up better players because they are around him. Kevin Durant is all-time great, and you sit and you watch Kevin Durant do a lot of that himself. Kawhi only does it himself when he has to. We're seeing a lot of guys rallying around Kawhi right now and playing better. Even if they start slow, he'll pick him up. 14 in the first quarter, does what he has to do. They wake up in the second half. He still goes for 36, but it's efficient. Everybody feels like they're part of this. They're not just sitting there on the ride. Kevin Durant, I think you sit along for the ride a little bit too much. We'll be right back to end hour two. Jason Martin Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Just want to let it breathe. Nirvana from Unplugged in New York. Man Who Sold the World, the David Bowie cover.
I think this is better than the original.
Yeah, and I like the original, but you're right. This album and this performance, something else. Right before this, they did Jesus Don't Want Me for a Sunbeam. Outstanding. I think it was 94. Not in front of me, but it's going to stick with us for a long time. Kawhi told Doris Burke, by the way, we're brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick and easy way you could save money. Switch to Geico. It only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com and see how much you could save. Jason Martin Show. I am J Mart on Twitter at JMartZone, 877-996-6369. That's 877-99 on Fox to join us. Kawhi told Doris Burke after the game that he plays to win. He doesn't play hero ball. I don't know if it's an intentional shot at Durant, but the first time I ever heard the phrase hero ball, it was the TNT crew on Inside the NBA, and Barkley in particular, describing Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and why it was that Oklahoma City would never get a championship playing the way that they did. And so as I was saying last segment when I was talking about how, and I've said a couple of times, and I've said a lot over the past 4 or 5 weeks, that I think Kawhi Leonard has emerged as the best player in the game, best overall player in the game because of what he does on both sides. I also said he makes everybody better around him. And right before this past break, I said, you never feel like you're just on the ride with Kawhi. You're on the ride with Kevin Durant. You're standing around watching Kevin Durant's greatness. And boy, is there a lot of greatness to watch when it comes to Kevin Durant. But Kawhi Leonard right there contextualizes it even if he doesn't mean to. I play to win. I don't play hero ball. He can be a hero. We saw it in Game 7 against the Sixers. This was a transcendent performance. Had 36 in this one last night for Toronto. Bench didn't show up. Everybody else not named Kawhi in the first quarter was 1 for 13 from the field. They could not hit a 3 to save their lives, and they hit everything they touched in Game 3. But Kawhi Leonard saying, I'm here to win. I'm not here to play hero ball. That, I don't know if he even watches TV. We don't know anything about Kawhi Leonard other than he's really good at basketball. He doesn't really care that we know anything else about him. So I have no idea whether or not that was a shot across the bow towards Kevin Durant or not. But I think it's a little bit revelatory towards the attitude of Kawhi about himself and how he approaches his game. Namely, it's all business, but he understands he's part of a team. And I think that that also comes from playing in San Antonio, where it is a team. It's a great coach. It's an incredible front office. R.C. Buford, long one of the best executives we've ever seen in the NBA. Duncan, mild-mannered. We were discussing that last segment. Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, all those guys, even those role players. It's why everybody that you brought in there got better, because there was no hero mentality. Yeah, you knew who the superstars were. But the Boris Diaws, the Gary Neals, the Patty Mills, whoever it was that they brought in, could contribute and would contribute, and they would find a way to get them involved in the offense. Popovich would find a way. And they had a collection of very selfless stars. So selfless, in fact, that Manu Ginobili, who would have started on most rosters, was just fine coming off the bench for a large stretch of his career and leading that second unit. When James Harden was asked to do that, well, he got out of Oklahoma City pretty quick after that. And, of course, they made a mistake and said, we're going to back Serge Ibaka over you. Imagine if they hadn't done that. Who knows? But Kawhi seems much more selfless. Unless you force the issue and nobody else can shoot or nobody else wants to shoot, and then he will put on the cape and the cowl and he will do whatever he has to do. But I think that that is a window into the mindset of Kawhi Leonard. He cares about winning games. He's not involved in hero ball. That, to me, is all I need to know to back the case I've made all day, which is Kawhi is the best player in the NBA because of what he does on both sides and how he engages everybody else on that roster. When we come back, we'll shift gears and talk some NFL. Carson Wentz got paid. Should he have? The answer is yes. We'll be right back here on Fox. Hour number three, bonus edition of the Jason Martin Show, in for Jonas Knox tonight. My show usually Sunday mornings, 3 to 6 a.m. Eastern Time. It will be as well tomorrow. Chris Plank was in last week, did a fantastic job. Appreciate him. Appreciate all of you guys as well. We're coming to you live from the Fox Sports Radio studios, brought to you by Geico. We're 15 minutes. You know this already, but the reason you know is because it's true. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit Geico.com for a free rate quote. Little icky thump. I like it. Jack White, Rackin' Tours, new album in 2 weeks. I'm here in the Music City in Nashville. We're big Jack White folks around here. I use Icky Thump for my daily Nashville show, but a different portion of the song. So it's brand synergy. At least for the Nashville audience listening to me here on our Fox Sports Radio affiliate, WGFX-FM. Talked a whole lot of NBA because that was the story, 105-92. Raptors get the job done, and they've got one more win that they need to finish this thing to slay the beast. And I just saw on Twitter, Kawhi is trending, but also trending is Kingslayer. We're not talking about Seth Rollins. We're talking about Kawhi Leonard being called the Kingslayer. He's called the Claw. He's called the Kingslayer. He does nothing. The stories are just that when he shoots, he just says, bucket. That is starting to, like, that's like Omar whistling down the street in The Wire at this point. If Kawhi shoots and just softly says, bucket, you just know you're about to take a bullet between the eyes. Because that's what that guy is doing. But I want to shift gears and talk some NFL with you. 877-99 on Fox is how you join us, by the way. That's 877-996-6369. Eric Roberts, Crisps. Profet and Kevin Figures, the trifecta spin of the Dallas radio style for me tonight out in Los Angeles. Carson Wentz got paid, 26-year-old, 4-year extension through 2024, worth $128 million, includes $107.9 in guarantees, which is, look, this is how it's done. Russell Wilson got $107 in guarantees. Give that .9 to Carson Wentz. That's a lot of money to commit, I know. It's going to turn out, though, I think, to be a bargain in the end, assuming that Carson Wentz is able to stay on the field. Now, he tore his ACL, he tore his LCL during 2017 against the Rams. We remember that. Nick Foles then showed up and did what Nick Foles did, won a Super Bowl. The Eagles have won, what, 4 playoff games in the last 2 years, and Wentz has been on the field for none of them. This past year, they shut him down in December. Stress fracture in his back. He broke his ribs in his rookie year during the preseason. He also had a stress fracture in his back, I'm reading, during his adolescence that they found at North Dakota State in his freshman year. So he's dealt with his share of injuries. I also remember, and maybe I was just a little bit crazy when I said this last year, but I thought going into last season that he was on the verge of being a top 5 quarterback in the league based on what I'd seen before the injury in 2017. And I'm not sure he was right quite yet when he came back last year. But you just paid a guy, if you were the Eagles, $128 with $107.9 in guarantees, who went 5-6 last year before they shut him down. So you're basing what you're doing on the expectation that what you saw before the big injury 2 seasons ago, that is the Carson Wentz that you still have. But if you're the Philadelphia Eagles, is this a good decision to make, giving him Russell Wilson guaranteed money? I would say the answer is definitely yes, because you already showed your cards. You had them in your hand, but they were flipped backwards, and everybody else at the table saw them when you let Nick Foles go. When you let Nick Foles leave, now he's in Jacksonville and he got paid as well, then you revealed that you believed in Carson Wentz. So what you've done, if you're the Philadelphia Eagles, who, if you've looked at their contract situation, everybody they have locked in for the next handful of years, whew, they are going to be tough to beat, because almost everybody that matters for that team is going to be there for, they've got a window, folks. It's not just this year. They got 2 or 3 years to get this thing done and get another Super Bowl. And Wentz is absolutely capable of getting them there. Now, the knocks that he loves Zach Ertz a little bit too much? Yeah, pretty much. Foles was spreading that ball around, finding 5 and 6 receivers. Golden Tate's standing there on a milk carton as soon as he gets acquired from the Lions before the trade deadline this past season. Everybody else is out there waiting for the football, and it continues to go to Zach Ertz. That's good for your fantasy team if you have Zach Ertz, but a lot of Philadelphia receivers are just standing around holding up their hands like, hey, we were pretty good in college too. We got talent. You can throw to us. But Wentz loved his tight end. We've seen other quarterbacks that have fallen in love with their tight ends as well, so it's not just him. But Foles are spreading the ball around a lot more. But what they've told Carson Wentz, in effect, is ahead of schedule, before they have to do this, because they absolutely didn't have to do this right now, they're saying, hey, bud, we're betting on you right now. We are betting on you. We already bet on you because we got rid of Nick Foles, and now we're going to pay you before we have to. There's not going to be a franchise tag situation here. We are showing our investment and our trust in you, Carson. Now go out there and win us some football games. And the danger in doing that for some athletes is when you pay them, then you've paid them and they don't have anything left to prove. I feel like the Eagles are a smart enough organization that this reflects pretty well on Carson Wentz. Now, Wentz said, look, maybe I was a little bit selfish, a little bit self-absorbed over the past year. We saw that story come out in the Philadelphia newspaper. There were unnamed teammates that were talking about how his attitude was out of control when he was a diva and all this kind of stuff. And maybe it was, and I think maybe that humbled him a little bit, and we may see a different version of Carson Wentz, who, by all indications, was a pretty good dude in college, and Nick Foles was a really good guy, and they let him go. So I don't think they left the cancer there and got rid of the cure. But Carson Wentz strikes me, because the Eagles are a smart organization at this point, that tells me that Carson Wentz is not the kind of character concern as it relates to just tanking it because you've already got your guaranteed money. I mean, 107.9, that's a lot of money to just kind of sit there, right? But I feel like this is an inspirational move to Carson Wentz to invest in him ahead of time and say, hey, you don't have to worry about us going through this wild contract negotiations in a couple of years, stories leaking out about malcontent on both sides, agents getting involved. No, we're just going to pay you right now, man. We believe in you. You're our guy. They moved up to get him in the draft. They loved him in college. He rose up the ranks. even with the injuries, they are betting on Carson Wentz. And they're betting on him, and I heard a couple of people mention this yesterday, and I had not thought about it from this perspective, but think about this if you have not. You also pay him before he goes out and has some all-time great year, potentially, and then can command more money on the next deal. You pay him now when there are still questions. If you want to have leverage, if you want to sit down and talk to Carson Wentz, but hey, we're going to invest in you. The injuries have us a little concerned, but we believe in you. We're going to pay you this much money. We're going to give you this much guaranteed. And so there are some positives and negatives there. You have some things that you can argue in favor and some things that you can say, eh, a couple of question marks here. But if he goes out and he's totally healthy this year and the Eagles win the Super Bowl, then what do you have to pay him? You're paying him ahead of schedule. You're paying him before the market dictates more. It's going to turn out to be what, around $25 million a season? That ain't bad if he is what we saw a couple of years ago in Carson Wentz. He seems to get along well with Doug Peterson. I think Frank Reich helped him. And, of course, Frank Reich is no longer there. But I feel like there were some other things going on with the Eagles, and I still am not sure how healthy Carson Wentz was at any point last year. I don't think that I'm on that he's one of the top five quarterbacks in the league argument anymore, but I still think he's top 10 with the capability of being top five, no question. He's a great athlete, good arm talent, smart player. If he did, in fact, get humbled by this whole experience, and if some of the stories that came out about him even had a kernel of truth that he could then use to maybe motivate himself to change, then the better version of Carson Wentz that they just paid for could be priceless to him. If he takes him to a Super Bowl and wins, he hasn't won a playoff game yet, but if he takes him to the playoffs and he wins with all the talent around him and he matures in the way that you assume that a young quarterback in the right situation with good management around him is going to mature, then that does make a lot of sense. But you paid a lot of money to a guy that was 5-6. But if you lock him into a long-term contract right now, if he becomes an MVP, you save millions down the road because the salary cap's going to keep going. And quarterback, we've seen this. The quarterback market keeps going. The next guy gets paid more. The next guy gets paid more. I'm sitting in Nashville right now. The big question mark, the huge question mark surrounding the Tennessee Titans franchise is whether or not the Tennessee Titans are going to commit to Marcus Mariota at the end of this year, because this will be the end of the rookie deal, and they're going to have to make a decision. I'm on record. It may not be popular in some circles here. I'm on record saying Marcus is not the guy. And there's a larger argument to be had here, and it's not about Wentz, but it's about your team, perhaps. If you are a mediocre football team, or if you're a team that's not just mediocre, but a team that's like 8-8, 9-7, you're always clamoring to get in the playoffs. You've got Tyrod Taylor as your quarterback, or you got, I don't know, any number of those kind of guys. Would you rather bottom out and have an awful quarterback and be in a position in the following draft to get a Carson Wentz or a Tua Tagovailoa, obviously, or a Trevor Lawrence or somebody like that being that bad, where you're at the top of the draft, and you don't have to wager a bunch of other draft picks and stuff to get up potentially to take your future? Would you rather be that than be 8-8? Because I think you can make the argument that you would, because the problem with a Mariota, or there are many of those kind of quarterbacks in this league, is that they're not bad enough to enable you to, without giving up a lot, draft their successor. Unless you do it free agent-wise. And even then, a lot of times you've had to commit money there. So would you rather be a two-win football team and get Trevor Lawrence than be a 9-7 team forever? That's the kind of thing that the Bills had to decide. It's what a lot of these teams have had to decide. Because you don't always know who you're going to get in the draft, but you realize at some point who you've got. Marcus has been in Nashville for 4 years. That tells me all I need to know, because we still don't know. At the end of the season, they're going to have to make a decision on Mariota, just like a lot of other franchises are going to have to make decisions on mediocre quarterbacks. And if you've got the right quarterback, you pay him whatever it takes to keep him there. Mahomes is going to get paid next year. That's going to be some insane money, and he's going to be worth every penny and then some. If you have an elite quarterback, you pay It doesn't matter what you have to pay to keep him there. The mistake is made when you pay a ton of money for mediocrity at that position. Because if you don't have a quarterback, what do you really have? And so the Philadelphia Eagles letting a Super Bowl winning quarterback that I still think is a backup disguised as a starter that might be marginally better than Blake Bortles, but I don't think he's going to be worth that much more in the end to a win-loss team for Jacksonville than was Bortles. And I mean Nick Foles here. But if you're going to let that guy go, then you've already told Carson Wentz and his representatives, oh, okay, well, they're betting on me. I'm about to get paid. So paying him now, before he goes out and has some kind of MVP-level season or takes him to a Super Bowl or a championship game or whatever it might be, that's a smart play. That's a savvy play from an organization that seems to have a whole lot of smart people in it. So good on them. Smart decision. Carson Wentz signed through 2024. He's only 26 years old. If he can stay healthy, and yes, that is a big if, then 107.9 in guarantees and an extension for 4 years worth 128, that's going to turn out to be an awfully good deal when we're talking about it in a couple of years. 877-99 on Fox. That's 996-6369. We'll be right back. Jason Martin Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What up, folks? Jason Martin Show rolling along here on Fox Sports Radio. Happy Saturday to you wherever you are. Blessed to have you as a part of my audience. Blessed beyond measure in my life. Hope you recognize that you are as well. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. We're brought to you by Discover. Discover alerts you if they find your social security info on any one of thousands of risky websites. That's free for card members. Just sign up online at discover.com/free alerts. Limitations apply. What am I listening to right now, Chris?
A little bit of garbage.
Okay. Shirley Manson. Got it.
Yep.
I don't know this tune.
Blood for Poppies?
All right. I know Stupid Girl and a few others, but...
Yeah, I had just...
I'm
had
only happy
sitting,
when it rains.
I had this sitting on my board, and I'm trying to remember why, but we have it right here. I think it was some sort of Milwaukee-based thing back from
right.
the Bucks series.
All right. It's all good. I say 90s alternative, 90s hip-hop. I like it. But if I don't recognize it, I'm going to ask you what it is, so just be aware.
Fair enough.
95% of the time, I'm not going to have to ask you. My memory's not great. My math skills are worse. If you followed me at Jmart Zone earlier tonight, I said I was going to be on from 11 to 3 Eastern time. That meant Pacific time, but I thought my math was off. Numbers, not good. Good thing my girlfriend was a math minor. That saves me a lot of trouble. Yeah, well, I make a lot of them. So I'm going to stick with the football talk here. We talked there about Carson Wentz in the first segment. I'm looking forward to getting back to football, man, especially once the NBA Finals are over. Boy, can't wait to get to the Pigskin this fall. But 18-game regular schedule, regular season schedule, we don't know, right? The new CBA, I feel like the NFLPA is going to say no to this. Now, they need to get some teeth because they got destroyed in their last couple of negotiations. You see how the NBA actually has some power. The players have some power. NFL does not. And that's going to need to change. But Roger Goodell came out and said, look, the preseason, we need to do something about the preseason. He's right. Preseason is no good. You are basically major, I'd say 95%, 90% of that team, it doesn't matter. You're basically six spots that are being competed for, five, six spots, somewhere in that neighborhood. So guys that are trying to make special teams, yeah, there's some cool stories that come out of like that fourth preseason game. But I feel like there's other ways to do that. More joint practices, which isn't necessarily safer. But it's always talked about, look, can we go to two preseason games and 18 regular season games instead of 16 and give you an extra bye? I don't think the players are going to go for this. I know Phil Simms came out and said, I think the players do want this. Well, a lot of players have already come out and said, no, we don't. And it's hard to argue that with them going safety as they are, the NFL preaching how safe they want to make a very unsafe game inherently. And I will say, until I'm blue in the face, you can only make an unsafe sport so safe until it's non-existent anymore. The only way to make football safe is to not play football. That doesn't mean that I think guys should be out there with no rules. It just means there is inherent risk in playing. And the people that play, as long as they're aware of said risks, you know, they're making whatever decisions that they need to make. But an 18-game regular season schedule, look, we want more football, right? As long as it's NFL football. At least I think we do. I mean, we're going to watch, and the ratings are going to be through the roof. So how do you get this? How do you make this work? There are two potential bargaining chips here for the NFL and for the owners. One of them is kind of gross and you don't want to see it happen. And that is the marijuana issue. And that is, all right, we will stop testing for marijuana. Or we will stop suspending players for testing positive for marijuana. But we want 18 games. And the reason why that's kind of shady to me is because the owners don't care if dudes are hanging out with shrubs or lighting up trees. They don't care. But they'll use it as a bargaining chip because they know it's leverage potentially. I think the XFL's getting this one right. I don't think the XFL will work, even though Vince has already earmarked $450 million to lose. And he has that money to lose and knows. He's like, all right, we're going to lose $450 in our first 3 years, and then maybe we'll start to turn a profit. There's a lot of other issues there, but the XFL has said, look, we're not going to test for this. And the NHL has already sort of gotten it right. If you fail a test for marijuana or if it shows up on a test for you, somebody from the league office calls you up and makes sure your mental health is okay. Hey, man, you doing all right? All right, buddy. We'll see you. And I could sit here and argue, and I do think at this point, after listening to Chris Long on the Dan Patrick Show, after he retired and talked about, look, I did it recreationally, but we know 6 to 8 weeks in advance it's coming. We know when we're going to be tested, so we get off during that time frame. And that tells you right there, anybody that fails a drug test for marijuana, they probably have a problem because they know it's coming and they still fail for it. But the bigger issue becomes, when you get off it, what are you going to do for pain management if that's your thing? And Chris Long says, well, they go to opiates. And as somebody that worked in pro wrestling for 9 years like I did, I saw stacks of muscle relaxers on tables in locker rooms. And I'm telling you, that stuff's way dangerous and way more dangerous, as are opiates, as you well know. It's destroying communities all over this country. My hometown, riddled with it. And the other town that I grew up in, went to high school in, went to middle school in, riddled with it. States are riddled with it. This stuff is far worse than cannabis. I can tell you that right now. But that becomes one of the bargaining chips for 18 games. The other idea is, that has been speculated, is, well, what if the 53-man roster becomes 75 or 80 on the sidelines on Sundays? What if we add 25 or 30 spots to add more depth, provide maybe more rest, or just potentially you just have more there? And there are a lot of players that would like to see that happen anyway, perhaps. But they're trying to find a way to make this work because ultimately, what is Roger Goodell trying to do? Roger Goodell is trying to maximize the profit. The owners are trying to maximize their revenue. And in an unsafe sport, the players just don't want to, or they want to have great quality of life later. And they don't want their risks to enhance. And of course, their risks will enhance if they play two extra regular season games. If you give an extra bye, okay, but you're still playing 18 games. It is an incredibly tough thing to ask. Here is what Giant, and it's, I know this is not a big name, but this is just one argument. There are a lot of guys out there saying this. Giants long snapper Zach Diassi, who's actually on the executive committee for the NFLPA, he told Newsday's Bob Glauber this, quote, "We don't need 18 games. It's just more opportunity to get hurt. The game is physical enough. It's hard enough. The argument is there's more money to be had collectively to play 18 games, but health and safety is paramount to us. Always has been. And we think the NFL is going pretty well right now, so I don't see why adding two more games would be necessary." And like I said, Phil Simms said on Pro Football Talk, and he was on his son's podcast, Chris Simms, quote, "If you put it up to vote, there's no doubt the players would vote to go 18 games. I do think it's heading that way. Just think when the owners get into all this. Two more weeks of TV money, TV would want it too. There's no question. This 18-game schedule definitely will be part of the NFL when the new collective bargaining agreement comes around," unquote. I think it will be exactly the opposite. And I've seen a whole lot more players come out and say, not this. I don't know if it's because they don't want to play it because it's too hard on their bodies, or if it is a safety thing. And I don't know where you guys stand out there in radio land on this. Do you think 18 games is a good idea? I think limiting the preseason, even if it stays at 16, is a good idea, but you know that's not going to happen. They're not going to two preseason games if you're not getting two extra regular season games. Or they're not eliminating the preseason without giving you that. They're not giving up the money that they get from the season tickets, which is still egregious in some cases where you're paying all this money for preseason games and then trying to recoup it just by selling those tickets away to people that couldn't go otherwise. It's a racket, folks. The preseason is no good in general. You get that one dress rehearsal game, but you know how the preseason goes. You watch the third game, and unless you're just a diehard, you just kind of find out what's going on. And maybe you bounce around. NFL Network will give you a bunch of different coverage at times. And you'll watch your local team maybe because you care a little bit more. But it's not wonderful. But they're not just going to do away with it and keep 16 games alive. I would anticipate that it's probably not going to change. Even if Goodell has said, and Goodell was crafty in this because he just talked about, we need to do something about the preseason, and everybody in the media immediately started saying, oh, he's suggesting two extra regular season games. No, he didn't say anything about that, even if he favors that. All he was talking about, all he did was mentioning that the preseason might need to be looked at a little bit deeper, and that became the immediate conclusion because it always has, because this issue is not new. We talked about this in 2018. We talked about it in 2017. I think I even remember hearing about it in 2016. Goodell is crafty on this one because he's gotten people to talk about an issue that he did not even raise. But until the next CBA, it's going to be a moot point. And we also know about the CBA that the NFLPA is telling players, hey, save money. This holdout thing is legit this time. And really, they may need to call the owner's bluff this time. Because if they want to get something done, as they have gotten trucked by the owners in the last couple of agreements, they are probably going to have to hold out. Because the owners have not seen enough, I think, to scare them just yet. They're not assuming Shane Falco is going to be out there starting for the Washington Redskins. That's not the assumption right now. That's not the belief right now. So they may actually have to put their money where their mouth is and walk off that field. So there are some really interesting things that are coming down the pipe from the NFLPA. I just don't think this 18-game schedule is going to fly, not with players. And I think that there's going to be an outcry as to, well, how can you preach safety and then make players play two extra games? Even if you think that's a ridiculous argument, believe me, that will be the argument. Let's go out to Los Angeles. Let's find out the latest. Kevin Figures does a great job. Kevin, what's up?
Thank you, Jason. We'll start with game four of the NBA Finals, where Klay Thompson returned to the lineup for Golden State. Had a pretty good night. 28 points, 11 of 18 shooting from the floor. It was not enough. The Raptors would come away with a 105-92 victory. Kawhi Leonard with 36 points on the night. He was aided by Pascal Siakam's 19 points. And Serge Ibaka, who was 9-for-12 from the field, scored 20 points off of the bench. Raptors can close out the series and win their first NBA title in franchise history with a victory at home on Monday in Game 5. Online car shopping can be confusing. Not anymore with True Price from True Car. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car, so visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. The French Open semifinal between Novak Djokovic and Dominic Thiem will continue in about 90 minutes or so. They will pick things up from the third set. That match was suspended due to rain. The winner will take on Rafael Nadal on Sunday. In baseball, the Giants beat the Dodgers 2-1. Astros walked off Baltimore 4-3. Marcus Semien went deep twice for Oakland in a 5-3 victory over the Rangers. Padres with a victory over the Nats. Rays over the Bo Sox. Cleveland beat the Yankees 5-2. Women's World Cup action continues on FS1 today at 9 Eastern with Germany taking on China. Back to Jason Martin.
Thanks, Kev. Welcome back to the Fox Sports Radio studios. We're brought to you by Geico, as always. It's easy to save 15% or more on car insurance with Geico. Go to geico.com or call 800-947-AUTO. The only hard part, figuring out which way is easier. What do you guys feel like in L.A.? Anybody can chime in. I can't see your faces all the way from Nashville, so I can't say, you say this and point at you. But what do you think? Do you think 18 games is actually a good idea? Do you actually think it has a chance of happening?
No, I don't think the players would ever sign off on it, to be honest with you, for all the reasons that you gave. You know, you and the NFL can't have this both ways. You can't say, like, well, we're making a concerted effort, whether they're a drug kicking and screaming into the safety issue or not. You can't say you want to protect the players and lessen the hits that these guys take and then try to add more regular season games for the starters. It doesn't make sense. I understand trying to cut down the preseason because none of us like that, but the players are not going to want to sign off on an 18-game schedule. I just don't see it happening.
What Russ do you think?
I don't think there's plenty of money to be made, and I think that's definitely going to play a major factor into this, is who can get the most money out of this altogether. But, I mean, players complain about Thursday night games. I mean, I know it's a little bit of a different situation. You know, it's more of a creature of habit argument in that situation. But these guys are already moaning and bitching and moaning about, you know, the wear and tear of their bodies. I don't see how you're going to get two more games out of them. And then plus, you know, the teams that are in it got the playoffs after that, so...
Chris, what do you think?
It's just not tenable to go to 18 with the structure that the way NFL rosters are set up. This idea that you have them completely limited to 53 men. And to be fair, too, most of those guys on the 53-man roster never see playing time on the field. If they have to come in due to an injury or something, they're like the level of talent falls off a cliff at that position almost dramatically. Just because, and there's no minor league where these guys can get reps, and I don't even think, because of the nature of football, you'd want them playing minor league games, which is why I'm always leery about stuff like the AAF and the XFL. A lot of these guys don't want to be playing the games too, because it means a potential to get seriously injured or hurt. So you could go to 18 games if you had a larger roster. If the touted line in the NFL of next man up was an actual reality rather than, oh, hey, did you just lose your starting edge rusher? You're kind of screwed for the year. Congratulations. But without those kind of like core changes to more personnel in the National Football League, without core changes to making sure these guys are ready to play on Sunday when it is next man up, there's no way that you can go to 18 games without completely devaluing your product. Now, on the flip side, you can get rid of all the preseason you want because it won't devalue your product. It will make it harder for, I think, some coaches to see which one of the guys at the bottom of their roster can get to stay. Because, I mean, you've got to cut down from 90 to 53. But at the same time, if you're the NFL, you're not moving product with those four preseason games. Those can be cut. But the cost to implement two extra regular season games is so much higher.
Yeah, I think there's definitely good points to be made across the board with all three of you, what you just said there. What do you think about the other thing that I mentioned just about, do you think we are moving? I know we're moving this way in the country. Do you think it's time for the NFL to get on board with the marijuana thing, especially with what Chris Long had to say? I would much rather these guys be medicating, or if it helps them out, and it seems like studies are out there to prove this at this point, I would much rather them be medicating themselves with cannabis than with Oxy, for example. That bothers me tremendously that you would lead to something like that.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, 100%. You're looking at all the opioid issue we have in the country right now and how many deaths that's led to. And, you know, people smoke marijuana, or they even use the CBD without having to use marijuana in it. I know that's something that's very popular, especially out here in Los Angeles right now. But, yeah, there is obvious benefits to be able to use that to something to help you out when you had injuries or to help with recovery. And the NFL would be smart to try to – because, look, you have someone like as talented as Josh Gordon, who has flamed out of the league so many times based strictly on marijuana. Now, to your point, Jason, that you made, these guys know exactly when they're going to get tested. So you're kind of an idiot if you end up getting busted for that. You have to stop smoking for a couple of weeks, and then you can do it as much as you want. But to that same point, you lose the ability to have someone that talented on the roster for the simple fact that he's smoking marijuana, which we know at this point is not as deleterious to your body as they would say back when they were making those movies where they said you go crazy and want to murder somebody. Obviously, those are just giant conspiracies.
Last Boy Scout kind of stuff. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It's not nearly as bad. So I'm with you on that. They should definitely do away with it and get a more liberal stance on it like the rest of the country seems to be going towards right now.
Also, guys, I would argue that, and I'm not like pointing fingers at anybody, but this stuff's pretty widespread in pro sports. And, I mean, you hear that from athletes after they get out and they're able to actually talk about it. Like, it's not surprising if you found out X amount of players on your favorite team got down that way.
Oh, it didn't. Was it? I forget. Was it Patrick Ewing who said that 80% of the NBA smoked weed?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
It's even worse for the NFL because I know, like, Calvin Johnson, I cover some Lions news with SB Nation. Calvin Johnson, when he got out, was talking about how widespread just painkillers are under the table around there. And, you know, you mentioned the opiate thing, and that really strikes home for me. I lost a cousin because he started on Oxy, ended up moving to heroin, and he overdoses, you know, not far from where he grew up in Pennsylvania. Right. And, I mean, like, I don't understand kind of the aversion to marijuana still. Like, every other grandpa out there is texting their grandsons or their cousins or, I mean, their nephews and being like, hey, have you heard about CBD oil? Have you heard about CBD oil? It's everywhere now. Like, it's on every – it's you could probably even turn on Fox News and you will see probably, hey, have you tried CBD oil? It'll change your life. There's CBD oil out there for pets. And for some reason, we're not allowing football players to use it. And there's very telling reasons why that is in place that way. And it needs to stop being that way. Like, there's a pain crisis, and you can either do it the smart way or you can do it the really dangerous way. And eventually, the very dangerous way will bite the NFL in the butt, just like CTE did.
Yeah. I mean, Jack Webb, Joe Friday. I remember watching the old Dragnet deal on Nick at Night. I'm not that old, but I was watching Nick at Night when Nick at Night was Dragnet and Dennis the Menace and Green Acres and things like that. And he would always talk about those funny cigarettes. And all that kind of stuff. I even think Joe Friday at this point would be like, all right, it's not that bad. It's really not. Like, there's a lot of things that are legal to do in this country. They're far worse than marijuana. I was in L.A. last week. I was in Anaheim for a wedding with my girlfriend, and we had a great time out there. I can't believe how many dispensary billboards I saw in a 3 or 4 day span. Boy, there is a business out there. There is no question about that. But when you look at the opiates and what it is doing, if we can knock that out of pro sports and people can stop taking muscle relaxers and all this because, you know, that joint is actually making them feel a lot better, then we need to do that. That needs to be done post-haste. When we come back, this is totally changing gears. We are going to talk about Reese's Cups. This, ladies and gentlemen, is called a tease. Stay in your car if you're in one, because you don't want to miss this. We'll be right back. Jason Martin Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Incubus. Pardon me. Pardon us here on Fox Sports Radio. We're live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. Jason Martin Show replacing the Jonas Knox Show for 1 week. Jonas is back next week, my good pal. I'm Jay Mart on Twitter at JMartZone, 877-99 on Fox, 996-6369. Here we go. Scott Kazmaier of Football Outsiders, who's a great follow, by the way, at Scott Kazmaier NFL. He's up late or he schedules tweets. I've never had him on my show. I wish I could. I really enjoy his content. But he was a little bit off the beaten path with this one. And, of course, it immediately made me want to talk about it. He tweeted out a couple of hours ago, Reese's Cups, great. Reese's Pieces, great. Reese's Cups with Reese's Pieces bites, bad. I don't get it either. And he's not wrong. Like, if you've had the Reese's Cups that have the Reese's Pieces in them, they're a little disappointing. The cups are pretty classic, and the pieces are fantastic. I don't know if you guys out there in L.A. are Reese's Pieces or M&M's peanut butter folks. I've always been a Reese's Pieces guy. But I responded to Scott, and I said, the eternal truth is that Reese's Holiday, meaning the eggs, the pumpkins, the Christmas trees, they are like 10 times better than any other Reese's Cups. With no disrespect to the regular cups, but there's something about the chocolate to peanut butter ratio of the holiday Reese's that is far superior to the regular Reese's. And I don't understand it. I don't care if it's white chocolate, dark chocolate, whatever. Doesn't matter. When you get those holiday things, those things are drugs. Those things are narcotics, basically. They are addictive, and they are incredibly good. And then that got me to thinking about, it's very similar to, at least to me, McDonald's Coca-Cola, which I have not drank in years because of my diet and things that I just don't do anymore. McDonald's Coke is a different formula than all other Coke. They've actually come out and said, yeah, it's different, and they won't tell you what it is. I don't know what it is, but their Coke is worth going just to drink Coca-Cola. Like, you can go to McDonald's, not eat anything, just order a Coke for a buck, and it's worth the stop. No other Coca-Cola, and Coke is good generally. No other Coke is McDonald's Coke. And then a third example is Starbucks water, which is free. Just go in there and get a large ice water or a Trenta ice water, which is their extra large, or a Venti or whatever it is that you want to get. It's triple filtered, and you can actually taste the difference between Starbucks water and everybody else's water. I can't explain these things. Kyrie Irving said the world was flat. I'm telling you, these things are true. Reese's Holiday, superior to all other Reese's. McDonald's Coke, superior to all other Coke. Starbucks water, superior to all other water. Gentlemen in L.A., do you agree, disagree? Have you had any experience with any of the three things I just talked about?
Well, I can definitely get you on the Reese's. Those Reese's eggs that they have for during Easter are amazing. And I'll take those over the Cadbury egg or even the classic Reese's any day of the week. So I'm with you on that for sure. The McDonald's Coke, I haven't been to McDonald's in years, just like you, so I really can't speak to it, to be honest. And I've never gone to Starbucks and gotten water, so I can't speak on that one either.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge coffee addict, so yeah. I really don't either, but their triple filtered water is actually worth just getting water.
Yeah, I'm actually intrigued by it now. I might actually get some today.
Yeah, give it a shot. I mean, it's free. Yeah, it's free, and they'll even tell you, yeah, we get it. Like, people will come in and order it, and they'll mobile order water and not pay a cent just because the water is worth stopping for. Anybody else agree with me that the eggs and the trees and all that stuff are better?
Yeah, there is something different about Reese's when it comes to holiday special edition. The Christmas tree ones and the egg ones, they're just something that hits differently. I agree 110% on that.
I mean, it just feels like you're getting more flavor. I don't know if it's more peanut butter or what it is. There's something about the ratio that is just 10 times better than a regular
Reese's. I'm definitely
Reese's
a guy that goes to the store the day after, the day or two after, and swoops in on a bunch of the discount price. Then I have to, like, legitimately throw the bag across the room, or else I'll just tear through them in a night.
Another thing, and this ignited Twitter last week, and maybe we'll do this a little bit in the next hour. I know I will be talking to Ryan Bershinger and the guys tomorrow about this as well. My girlfriend Abby and I, we went to In-N-Out because we had heard for years, oh, In-N-Out's the greatest food in the world. So, of course, we made a part of our trip. Hey, we'll go to In-N-Out on last Friday night, as a matter of fact. You know what? Of all the food that I had eaten, that was the latest at that point. That was the most recent. It wasn't that it was bad. I don't know if it was just overhyped. It just kind of tasted like food. There was nothing particularly special about it, and they sell T-shirts for this stuff? We'll be right back on Fox. Final hour of the program, bonus day. I'll be on tomorrow as well. Regular spot of the Jason Martin Show here on Fox Sports Radio, 3 to 6 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm in for Jonas Knox tonight. Appreciate that. Jonas working hard. Hopefully enjoyed his night off. We're coming to you live from the Fox Sports Radio studios. We're brought to you by Geico. We're 15 minutes. Yeah, you know it. It's because it's true. You remember things that are true. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. 105-92, Raptors win. 3-1. One more, and the Warriors lose the NBA Finals, and Kawhi Leonard does it to him. No Kevin Durant. Maybe he plays in Game 5. One story that came out right after the game that we have not discussed, and I heard Brian Windhorst talking about this right afterwards, and there have been some other reports to back this up, is that the Warriors fully believe the team, the players, believed that Kevin Durant was going to play last night. They thought he was going to come to practice on Thursday and that he was going to suit up and play last night. And so he did come to practice on Thursday. And he tried. And he couldn't do it. And the training staff said, you know what? Nope. And Kevin said, you know what? Nope. And the reports say that Golden State was a little bit demoralized. They were down. They were frustrated. I think Kerr was probably frustrated, and I'm sure some of the team was, because they were expecting, not only are we going to have Klay Thompson back, we're also going to get one of the two best players in the world back. And them not being able to do it The other part of this report was that the Warriors' belief after Game 3 that they could get this thing home and could get the job done, even if KD wasn't able to come back, had, quote, worn thin, unquote. That was what Windhorst said. And you know what? I was part of the chorus that said, I don't think they need Kevin Durant to win. I think he makes it easier. But we're seeing Golden State can still get this thing done. And you know what? I was wrong. They can't. Steph's the only guy that can get his own shot on that team. Durant, of course, can. But he's not out there. Klay Thompson can't get his own shot. You have to set him up. He is a great player. He is a fantastic defender. One of the best shooters we've ever seen. But you've got to get him the basketball. He doesn't create his own offense. Draymond, we know he's not that great an offensive player, despite everything else that he does well for you. DeMarcus Cousins, my goodness. He was nightmarish last night. And he wasn't good in Game 3 either. He was good in Game 2. And it's not that he's just falling apart and he's no good. His body is just, his body needs an offseason. His body is telling him, look, we ain't got nothing left, buddy. His mind, it's not an effort thing. He worked really hard to get back on the floor because he wanted to play in the NBA Finals. Never knows if he gets another chance. Obviously, he's never done it before. He desperately wanted to get out there and play. He doesn't really fit the team. He doesn't fit what they want to do. The ball stops when it hits him. But his body, man, it looks like he can't. He's running like I ran 185 pounds ago. I mean, it's bad watching that. Iguodala is hurt. That team had no chance without Kevin Durant against Kawhi Leonard. And that's really the story here. You know, I saw some people tweeting out, man, still not even talking about the Raptors. Everybody's talking about the Warriors. Well, of course, because they're the dynasty. The story is the Warriors losing more than it is the Raptors winning, and maybe it shouldn't be. And that's why I spent the large part of the first hour describing to you why Kawhi Leonard is the best player in the world. He's the best player in the NBA. And I gave it to you case by case by case. I don't care who it is that you want to put against him. Durant's the only argument I'll even listen to. LeBron, no, not in 2019. LeBron's a better player career-wise. I'm not arguing. This is not a career thing. Don't come to me and say, LeBron in his career. No. I'm not talking about it. I'm talking about right now today, who's the best player in the world. It's not LeBron James. LeBron has had to save defensive energy in order to have offensive energy. He's old. He's not the best player in the world anymore. He's still somebody you can win a championship with. I absolutely believe that if you put the talent around him and he's able to bring it in. And, I mean, he's all-time great. And then you look at Harden. Harden's a great offensive player. He's improved his defense, largely because of the defensive coordinator that they had alongside D'Antoni down there. But he's got some flaws in his game still. He's not a great defender. Anybody else you want to name? Giannis, he's about to be the NBA MVP. Not a good free throw shooter. Has no jump shot. Can't make a consistent three. If you can find a way to shut his driving game down, or if his shooters aren't on that night when he kicks out, they're going to struggle. You know how I can say that? Because I saw Toronto do that in four consecutive games and knock them out of the Eastern Conference Finals after falling behind 2-0. That's why. Whatever guy you want to name, I'm going to tell you, unless it's Kevin Durant, and you can make that argument, but I'm going to make it again against Kevin Durant here. Even though I love Kevin Durant to death, and it's amazing watching him play. Kawhi's the best player in the world because he's a better defender. He's an elite defender. He's on the verge of a Scottie Pippen-level defender. If you want to compare anybody to Jordan, I'm not saying Kawhi Leonard is Michael Jordan. I am saying that the stories of Kawhi doing nothing but watching Michael Jordan YouTube videos for years, that if you want to look at somebody's game and the way that they have emerged and the killer mentality that they have, I know you. A lot of LA people listening to me right now want to talk about Kobe Bryant. Kawhi is the closest thing I've seen to Jordan just in terms of the will to win and the commitment on both sides. Jordan was a fantastic defensive player.
Kobe was a good defensive player. Kawhi is on a totally different level defensively. Kawhi did not come out of college with an offensive game, and he's developed it. People thought he wasn't going to be a double-figure scorer. My man's he's almost averaging 30 in the NBA Finals. If you need him to, he'll get you 40. He's done it in this postseason already. He's got the softest jumper in the league, I think. That's how he gets all these roles. What beat Philadelphia? And you're just like, how in the world did that shot drop? It dropped because Kawhi Leonard's shot is so soft. There's a few other bounces he's gotten in this postseason. Not in that big a moment, obviously, at the end of a game. We're just like, how in the world did that drop? It dropped because of his touch. But the big difference between Durant and Kawhi Leonard right now is that if you put Kevin Durant on the Raptors, I don't think they're in this position. Because I don't think a whole lot of people get better around Kevin Durant. And we are seeing guys beginning to step up over the past couple of series, beginning to believe in themselves because they look at the captain of the ship and they know that that boat is not hitting the iceberg because Kawhi's not going to let it. And if he's going to go out there and do his job and pick you up when you shoot 1-for-13 like they did in the first quarter last night, and Kawhi instead goes for 14, keeps them in the game, scores 14 of their 17 points, keeps them close. Second quarter, they still can't shoot. Third quarter, Kawhi gives you 17, and that team scores 37 points. Second straight game, Toronto has scored 35 or more in the third quarter. And the third quarter, that's Golden State's quarter, man. That's what we've seen for years. You can have a lead on them, and then in the third quarter, they'll put up 40 and blow you completely out. And here it's Toronto taking advantage. With like 4.5 minutes left in the final 4.5 minutes of the third quarter, Toronto put this thing almost out of reach. Now, I know Golden State kept fighting, but this thing was Toronto's in that moment. And it was Kawhi that came up big. And it was Kawhi that when you came out to start the third quarter, what happened? Three. Next possession, three. Kawhi has 6 straight points. A 4-point lead at the half becomes a 2-point lead for the Raptors after they trailed by 4. And it felt like a reward and a victory for Toronto that they were only down 4 after how badly so many of them played in that first half. The Warriors looked like they should have been up 15. They were up 4. I immediately thought, uh-oh, this could be trouble. And it was. Steph was not particularly good because he had to give so much in Game 3. He didn't have very much left in Game 4. Klay came out there and gave you 27 points. I mean, they gave you 56, I think, between the two of them. The Splash Brothers, they still lost this game by 13. You want to talk about some stats? Those guys played pretty well in terms of just the points that they scored, not as efficiently. I mean, it was not a great night for Steph, no question about that. But the Raptors won by 13. But the more stunning one is Game 3. Steph scored 47, they lost by 14, and it felt like they could have lost by 30. The Raptors have been the better team in this series. I was wrong. This Warriors team, with this level of depth and this level of, you just can't trust them offensively outside of Steph and for the most part, Klay. This team does need Kevin Durant to beat the best player in the world. They either need the second best player in the world, or if you want to argue with me that he's the best player in the world, to beat the second best player in the world. These are the two guys that were playing the best in the postseason before Durant got hurt. Since he's gone down, it's been Kawhi's show. Kawhi is one win away from giving Toronto, their NBA franchise, a championship. And remember, everybody, or a lot of people thought, you've got to be kidding me. You're going to get rid of DeMar DeRozan, an all-star player that wanted to be in Toronto, where nobody seemed to ever want to stay. They all wanted to leave. I mean, Lowry's wanted to stick around, but DeRozan wanted to be there. You shipped him out for a guy that you did not know if he wanted to be there, didn't expect him to stay for 1 year. What can we do? All right, well, we're going to take Kawhi Leonard. We'll just see what we can do. You bring in that dude for 1 year and he wins you an NBA championship in that 1 year? That's got to go down as one of the all-time great decisions. And boy, there are a whole lot of people that second-guessed. And Masai Ujiri has turned that thing on its head. Move out Dwayne Casey, coach of the year last year. Move out DeMar DeRozan because He could not shoot a three to save his life, especially against LeBron James. Didn't make a single three against LeBron James in any playoff series in any year that those two teams played. And I think it was 4 years in a row the Raptors lost to LeBron James. In those series, DeMar DeRozan didn't make a single three. He took a lot, missed all of them. He doesn't have a three-point shot, so you get rid of him. An all-star level player in DeMar DeRozan. And I looked at it and I said, look, Lowry and DeRozan never going to win a championship together. And Lowry wasn't clutch. And Lowry's in a gym empty after a terrible shooting performance a couple of years ago. He's shooting at like 3 in the morning with like one light on. That was the story that was coming out. Then he came out and he scored like 20 in the next game. But he was totally inconsistent. You bring in Kawhi Leonard. And Kawhi Leonard, on the nights when nobody else showed up, he would show up. But we've seen the emergence of other guys on this team that have grown in confidence and now believe not just in that guy, but are starting to believe in themselves that they are going to beat the Warriors. And they've got three cracks to get one win to get that job done. You bring in Kawhi, nobody expected him to stay. We don't know if he's going to stay. I can make the argument, maybe I will. I've already done it once, but I may argue again why he should stay in Toronto, why I hope he does stay in Toronto. But you bring him in, if you get a couple of rounds in the playoffs, I don't know what you've accomplished. You gave up a guy that would have stayed his entire career for you, and you knew you could win a lot of games. Really, the only problem was you couldn't get past LeBron James. And the year you get rid of DeMar DeRozan, LeBron heads west and goes to the Lakers and opens it up. But I'm telling you, if DeMar had been there, we wouldn't be looking at the Raptors in the finals. And I think DeMar DeRozan's a very good basketball player. He's just not a championship-level basketball player. The mentality's just not there. He will disappear on you. Kawhi Leonard, not going to disappear on you. You bring that dude in for 1 year, it's all or nothing. All the chips are in. And then the river card's going to come down. And the river card is going to be the Larry O'Brien trophy going to Toronto? You've got to be kidding me. That isn't, that's just, I mean, that's a story made for Hollywood right there. And if they can keep him, who knows? That's a really good basketball team. And we're starting to see some of these other guys growing before our eyes because the guy in charge that said to Doris Burke after the game, I care about wins. I don't care about playing hero ball. I don't know if it was a shot across the bow at Kevin Durant, but hero ball is what you've heard described in terms of Kevin Durant dating back to Oklahoma City, that too often they engaged in one-on-five hero ball, and that will eventually get you beat by a consistent, cohesive team with chemistry in the postseason. Kawhi Leonard only gets you 40 if nobody else wants to shoot. He had 36 last night, but he was 11 of 22 from the field. He was 5 of 9 from 3, and he was 9 of 9 from the free throw line. Let me give you one other stat before we go to this first break here in this final hour. On Wednesday night in Game 3, the Toronto Raptors only missed one free throw. I think they were 21 of 22 in that ballgame, 95.2%. Last night, they only missed one free throw. They were 23 for 24, 95.8%. That's unreal. They are doing exactly what a championship team has to do to beat a Goliath that isn't playing like one, that's beaten up and battered and missing the one thing that could have gotten him home. And even if he comes back for Game 5, what percentage of Kevin Durant are you going to get? And if he has to shake off any level of rust at all, they can't afford that. This series is over, folks. The Toronto Raptors are about to win the NBA championship. And Kawhi Leonard is going to be the reason why. And that's unreal. We'll be right back. Jason Martin Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Not sure which version of the Mission Impossible theme I'm listening to right now.
It's using it as the front, but this is actually Limp Bizkit.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Take a look.
I mean,
around.
It was whichever film it was. That's right. It was.
Oh yeah,
right.
It was in Mission Impossible 2. Yeah, I actually
I thought
had
Metallica was MI 2.
No, it was Limp Bizkit on that. But I had the Mission Impossible 2 soundtrack, and that was like my intro to nearly the best of like '90s hard rock, and that did have Metallica on there. and Godsmack and Foo Fighters and Chris Cornell and many others.
Yeah.
It's a great soundtrack.
Amazingly enough, the three most preposterous franchises that have had severe longevity continue to go, and I will continue to go watch these films until they go away. Mission Impossible, Fallout last year was one of the five best films I saw. I'm a movie critic, and I was going to vote for it in my year-end rewards for the Music City Film Critics Association here in Nashville. I know Roma and all these things. No, Mission Impossible Fallout was fantastic. Those films, particularly since Ghost Protocol, have been tremendously entertaining action films. Just superb.
Kind of like how Keanu Reeves carries John Wick and those movies are all about it. The Mission Impossible movies are almost completely carried now by just how good of an action star Tom Cruise is.
Yeah, and they have a good cast around them when they've had Renner and they've had... It's been really good. And you mentioned John Wick. That was the second one. And the third one is the most preposterous of all. And that's the Fast and the Furious franchise. And it changed at some point. Fast 5 came out, and Fast 5 was some mix of Fast and Furious and Ocean's 11. And it became this heist idea. And since 5, it's become more and more over the top and outlandish and outrageous to where if they go to space in number 10, I would not be surprised. I mean, they had a submarine come up, a giant submarine following these sports cars in the last film.
Crazy
and the
to
more
think these guys all just started off by stealing DVD players.
Seriously. It's awesome, though. Like, these films are so much fun. Like, at some point, I just want to be entertained. Like, there's always time for the heavy drama. I get it. I love all that stuff. I've written about it. I've made money writing about it. It's great. But I also just want to be entertained sometimes. John Wick entertains me. These Fast and Furious films are just awesome. I can't wait to see Hobbs and Shaw. I know it's going to entertain me. These Mission Impossible films don't let me down. Like, you can keep some of this pretentious stuff. There was a shift. I don't know if I've talked about it on Fox, but there was a shift in Academy Awards at some point around the turn of the century. Well, not really turn of the century, a little bit after the turn of the century. For a long time, especially in the 90s, and I guess maybe through 2005 or 2006, the films that won Best Picture all made a ton of money. They were these giant blockbusters that just raked in the dough that made sense, like Return of the King and things like that, that everybody saw that made hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. And the last one that actually made significant money that won Best Picture, I think, was A King's Speech. And that shouldn't have won. And I thought it was a good movie. But The Social Network should have won Best Picture that year, in my opinion. But since that point, you've had, like, The Artist and The Shape of Water and all of these things that have weird messages or that 10 people saw. Some of them are good. I'm not necessarily saying that any one in particular is good. But if you want to talk about why the ratings are down for the Academy Awards, it's because no one has seen the nominees. That's why they expanded the category. I mean, The Dark Knight didn't get nominated for Best Picture. To me, it's the best film. It's the best film of my lifetime. It's my favorite film of all time. Heath Ledger not getting an Academy Award. Chris Nolan not getting an Academy Award nomination that year. Like, a lot of the films that people have seen don't get nominated. That's why Black Panther made so much more sense last year. And why, you know, something like, that's why I don't have a problem if people ask me what the five best films were of the year. I'm not necessarily just going to lean on the critic cred and go with that stuff. I'm going to tell you, nah, Mission Impossible Fallout's worth your time. Another one of the top five films last year, without question, was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which did make a ton of money and was animated and was phenomenal and was for an adult audience and had everything that you could possibly want if you have any interest whatsoever in that genre. It was beautifully done. And if you want to tell me this, if you want to ask me right now this year, what movie is most worth my money this year? I'm going to tell you it's Avengers Endgame, and I'm going to say it's not close. And I'm hoping that it gets honored, as it should when we get to the end of the year. It seems like Hollywood wants a message, and they want to honor these things that have messages, and they want to pat each other on the back for whatever critic or critique that they have socially or whatever it is that they want to push. But the people would like to see the films get honored that they've actually paid money to watch. So that's a little bit of a tangent just based on Chris coming back with the Mission Impossible 2 soundtrack. But sometimes, look, I do talk pop culture and write about it for a living. So I can do that. But Mission Impossible Fallout, if you didn't happen to see that, if you didn't see Ghost Protocol, if you didn't see the film that came after it, the name escapes me right now, Rogue Nation. If you didn't see those films, you need to see those films. You definitely need to see Fallout. It's absolutely tremendous. I want to talk about Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets. I know they're not playing right now. And they're, by the way, they're not going to be playing at this time of year if Kyrie Irving becomes the guy that they try to form their franchise around. That's what we call a tease. I think it makes sense before we shift gears to that to go to Kevin Figures out in L.A. one more time and catch up with the latest. Kevin, what's up?
All right, Jason, we'll talk about the defending champs. They are on the brink of elimination. They suffer a 105-92 loss to the Toronto Raptors on Friday. Kawhi Leonard scoring 36 points. He also had 12 boards. Serge Ibaka, 20 points off the bench for the Dinosaurs. GSW Hoops committing 17 turnovers. They missed 7 free throws in the loss. They now face a 3-1 series deficit. As they shift back to Toronto, the Raptors can clinch the first title in franchise history with a Game 5 win on Monday night. Online car shopping can be confusing. Not anymore with True Price from True Car. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car, so visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. In baseball, Clayton Kershaw lost the game for the first time since last July, the Giants beating the Dodgers in San Francisco 2-1. Fernando Tatis Jr., 3 hits and a home run in just his second game back for San Diego. They beat the Nationals 5-4 in walk-off fashion. Seattle handled their Angels 6-2. Astros with a walk-off win over Baltimore. Dan Plesac's nephew, Zach Plesac, shut down the Yankees in a 5-2 victory over Cleveland. Women's World Cup coverage continues on FS1 today at 6 a.m. Eastern Time, or 9 a.m. Eastern Time, I should say. Germany taking on China. That'll be followed by a doubleheader on Fox as Spain faces South Africa at noon Eastern, followed by Norway taking on Nigeria. Back to Jason Martin.
Appreciate it, Kev. And I should probably do this as well. I'll do it in a second. Welcome back to the Fox Sports Radio studio. It's brought to you by Geico. It's easy to save 15% or more on car insurance with Geico. Go to geico.com or call 800-947-AUTO. The only hard part, figuring out which way is easier. And we're also brought to you by Discover. Discover alerts you if they find your social security number on any one of thousands of risky websites. That's a free benefit of many for card members. Just sign up online. The website is discover.com/free alerts. Limitations do apply. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone, getting a lot of good feedback from you this morning here on the Jason Martin Show. Bonus edition with Jonas Knox out this week. My show usually 3 to 6 a.m. Eastern Sunday morning. So you'll also hear me in about 24 hours from right now, right here on this same Fox Sports Radio station, wherever you are around the country. I hope this finds you and yours doing incredibly well. So, Kyrie Irving, who at one point believed the earth was flat, I think he has now come out and said that's not true, but I don't know that he's just kind of saying that to get people off the scent or what. But, and he had a weird Instagram post a couple of days ago that I'm not sure what that means. I don't know if he's a really smart guy who's just a little eccentric or what exactly the case is, but I do know this. I've seen this from New York reporters, and Stephen A. Smith has reported it as well, that Kyrie is nearing Brooklyn being his destination, that the Nets will give him $140 million to come be their guy. And they have cleared enough space with this Allen Crabbe move that they've done over the past couple of days to land a second guy. I don't know who that might be, but Kyrie would be sort of the alpha. Have we not learned, Brooklyn? Organization, meaning not the city. I think the city knows. But have we not learned what it looks like when Kyrie Irving is the alpha of your basketball team? Did you not watch the Boston Celtics this year? I'm not telling you that Boston was worse with Kyrie Irving this year than last year. I'm saying they were much worse this year with Kyrie Irving than they were last year with him on the sidelines. This was a team a year ago that looked like they liked basketball. This was a team a year ago that looked like they knew how to play basketball. This was a team a year. You remember last year when the big sort of talking point about the NBA as we watched the playoffs was that outside of Greg Popovich, Brad Stevens might be the best coach in the NBA. This year, can Brad Stevens even coach? I mean, look how everything changed for this franchise. They seem like they couldn't stand one another this year. There was no team. Rozier immediately went to the media as soon as the season was over, talking about, I want to get out of here, basically. Basically, he said it without saying it. If things are the same, meaning if Kyrie's back and we're doing this again, I don't want to be here next year. Jaylen Brown regressed. Jason Tatum regressed like crazy, and I don't think he's forgotten how to play basketball. There was no cohesion here at all. There was no chemistry here at all. And that is because Kyrie Irving is a fantastic basketball player. But that does not mean that he is a good leader, because he's not. Not quite to the same degree as Kevin Durant in this way. But those two gentlemen, with all of the talent that they possess, appear to be the two most unhappy, miserable people in pro sports right now. Kevin Durant has got burner accounts, and he's in his feelings, and he might leave because they don't give him enough respect out in Golden State, or maybe he can't coexist with Draymond, and Draymond got under his skin when he said, we won before you got here. Maybe that changes now because they're about to lose to the Toronto Raptors, and so Kevin Durant's about to get more credit back for the championships that he won over the past couple of years, credit that he was not getting until we've seen this act against the Raptors and Kawhi this year. But Kyrie Irving is never happy. He's happy for like 2 days at a time, and he goes after the media. I don't care. I'm a shooter. I should have shot 30 shots. All that stuff. Do you really want to build your franchise around that guy if you're Brooklyn? I mean, Brooklyn's a secondary team in New York to the Knicks. I know the Knicks have no real history. I think it's, what, 71? It's either 71 or 75, their last championship. The mid-90s teams were fun. Those Ewing teams and John Starks and Mason and Oakley. And like, those were some fun teams that weren't able to quite get it done, but those were some talented teams. Had some wars with the Pistons and with the Pacers in particular, with Reggie Miller. But the Knicks are a franchise that you kind of want to be good, but were never good or have not been good throughout my lifetime. I was born in 78. I'm 40. I've never really seen a Knicks team on the cusp of a championship. Maybe a couple times they sniffed it. Last time they were relevant was what? Carmelo and Amari Stoudemire? Not even when it was just Carmelo, when Amari had just, you know, he just couldn't play anymore because his body just wasn't having it. But Carmelo and Amari. So the Knicks are still the team, though, because they're sort of the A-level team in New York. So you're going to go to Brooklyn if you're Kawhi or if you're Kyrie Irving. And that's not a bad place. The Barclays Center is a better building. I think that everything about it would work except that it's Brooklyn. But the main thing is you can't win with Kyrie Irving as your number one guy because he's not a number one guy. He's clearly a number two guy. He could be the best one-on-one player in the league just in terms of being able to take you off the dribble. His crossover is otherworldly. I don't care if the earth is flat or round. Whatever planet he is on, whatever he says goes when it comes to his crossover and the way he handles the basketball and the way he can score from time to time when he wants to. It's not too consistent, and he just does not seem to be somebody that's fun to play around. And there is something to be said for actually wanting to be on the floor with your superstar. I'm not saying you have to get along as a team to win a title. I'm sure there are many teams that couldn't stand one another and won championships. That might have been last year's Golden State Warriors, as a matter of fact. Maybe not. I'm just speculating at this point. I'm not saying that that's true. Don't quote me on that. I'm just throwing out one example. And remember the story from Seth Wickersham about Brady and Belichick and Kraft? Well, the Patriots still won a Super Bowl. They could all be jockeying to see who gets credit for it, but they're still winning. You can win without it, but you can't win when the guy that's in charge is not a leader. Kawhi Leonard may not be an emotional leader, but on the floor, everybody follows his act. They follow his lead. They follow how hard he plays on both ends. Kyrie is one of the worst defenders in the NBA. I think, what was it, last year with the Cavs? I guess maybe it had been 2 years ago. His defensive efficiency ratings, he was dead last in the league of all players in the NBA. When I'm talking about Kawhi being the best player in the world, it's because he's so good offensively and he's exquisite defensively. Kyrie Irving is as one-dimensional gets. And you're going to hand the keys to him and say, all right, lead our young talent. Lead this young team that's been built on gradual, incremental improvement, or that's kind of been our philosophy. Well, now we're going to throw a bunch of money at Kyrie Irving and we're going to expect that that's going to take us to the promised land. That ain't going to take you nowhere. That's going to take you to not playing in the playoffs, or if you do, being a nice, consistent, nice 7 or 8 seed that gets nowhere. The Boston Celtics had a bunch of blue-collar guys last year that played above themselves but played together and were double tough. This team wanted to stop playing basketball. This team had no interest in being on the floor anymore. They didn't want to see a basketball. And it's not because their bodies didn't want to play. It's because they didn't buy into anything that was happening. When you go from Brad Stevens being maybe the best coach in the league along with Popovich, I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying that's what people were saying. You saw it on TV. You heard it on radio. You read it in print. It became a talking point in the league. One of the best young minds in the league. Brad Stevens has these kids believing. And that's what Brad Stevens has done his whole career. I mean, he was at Butler. He's bringing guys that aren't necessarily the LeBron James of the world and making them buy in. And he can coach that. There is a skill to being able to coach high level talent. And it's not something he's ever had to do. He's had a couple of talented guys come out of Butler. I'm not saying Hayward wasn't a good player in college. But Butler was not Kentucky. It was not Duke. It was not North Carolina. It was not Arizona. It was not one of those kind of schools. So he was more used to the team that he had last year. So maybe you can put some of the blame on Brad Stevens for not really knowing what you're supposed to do with a Kyrie Irving or a Gordon Hayward. But I can't put too much on it because I don't know what in the world you're supposed to do with Kyrie Irving. I would imagine if Kyrie Irving tried to coach Kyrie Irving, he would get frustrated with Kyrie Irving. But that team last year, with less talent and names that you did not recognize, or you felt like was less talent, played above themselves. This team played far beneath themselves because the guy in charge just drove them off a pier into the water because his leadership skills are negative and his emotions and the attitude is infectious. Attitudes are infectious, ladies and gentlemen, positive and negative. This team played the way Kyrie Irving's face looked. If I'm the Nets, I don't want any part of that. They're about to hand him money. If I'm a Nets fan, you'll have fun watching some of the individual stuff that Kyrie can do. You're not going to have fun when that team does not matter when you get to the postseason. We got one more segment. It's next. Jason Martin in for Jonas Knox. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. We'll be right back here on Fox Sports Radio. Final segment of the program. I'll be on tomorrow, 3 to 6 a.m. Eastern Time, my regular spot for the Jason Martin Show. Jonas taking a well-deserved evening off, so I've been in for him with a bonus edition of the Jason Martin Show. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. You can follow me there. Crew has done a great job all night long. Fellas coming up next. I've worked with both of them. Those two guys are incredibly talented. They'll be really entertaining as we continue here with Fox Sports Radio on the weekends. If Kevin Durant returns for Game 5, what in the world can you reasonably expect from him? He hasn't played in over a month. If he comes back, it feels like they're rushing him back. I still don't believe he is. I said from the day he got injured, you can go back. I have never wavered on this, that he would not play again this season. I didn't buy that this strain was a mild calf strain. I'm not saying that they lied and it's been a torn Achilles the whole time. I'm just saying that this thing was worse than what they said at the time. They may have hoped. I mean, Steve Kerr hoped that he would show up around the middle of the series, which was sort of optimistic because that meant it was going to go 7 if he thought he was going to come back in Game 4, for instance. But Durant hasn't even practiced with the team. Like, he tried to go yesterday for a little while, couldn't do it. I mean, he is, if he comes back, the rust and just the condition, he's not going to be in game shape. We're seeing what that looks like with DeMarcus Cousins. Now, I'm not saying he's going to lumber around like DeMarcus Cousins, but Cousins gave you a good game in game two, and that's it. Game three, he was bad. Yesterday, he was all-time terrible. Two turnovers in the first minute of that game. It was atrocious. And it wasn't because he didn't want it and because he had no effort. It's because his body had nothing left. So if Durant comes back, the Warriors need him. I was wrong. They need him to win a championship. Against this guy, against the best player in the world, in my opinion, Kawhi Leonard, they need him. But they don't need the rusty 60% Kevin Durant. Now, he'll help them better than what they have. But if he comes back and he can't give you what Kevin Durant gives you, they're still getting beat in five, folks. And this thing's going to be over. And Toronto's going to be celebrating. And we, the North, is going to be celebrating. And Kawhi Leonard, in a 1 year, maybe it was just a rental, may turn out to be the greatest rental of all time. We'll see. But you can't imagine Durant's going to come back and get you 50 or even get you 40 or maybe even get you 30. It's not like he's not going to be able to shoot, but I mean, getting back into it right now in the thick of it, that is asking a lot of him. And I'm on record again. If they bring him back, I bet you he's nowhere close to 100% and he's not going to be able to get this job done. They're down 3-1. No team that has lost two road games or two home games, in this case, I guess, for the Golden State Warriors, has ever come back from 3-1 to win. And I don't think you're beating Kawhi Leonard. I don't think that dude's going to let you beat him three times. Even if Kevin Durant was 100%, I don't think you're going to beat him three times. So I think this thing is a wrap. And that's not necessarily great just because, well, we're about to get to, once we're done here, Stanley Cup Finals will be over here in a little bit. And it's not something you really talk about all that much on radio. We could have talked about that non-call, but there's not really anything to talk about. It was a terrible call. It wasn't quite as bad as the NFC Championship game, but it was right there. It was bad. Officiating's been bad in a lot of sports all year long. We've been talking way too much about the officials. But this time, we're just talking about a better basketball team. The Raptors are about to be the NBA champions. This could be recorded, and I can end up getting buried with it if they come back from 3-1 and the Warriors, you know, reverse what happened to them with the Cavs. But the circumstances are so different, and they're all still stacked against the Warriors. Curry's exhausted. Iguodala's having a hard time moving. Cousins can barely move. They brought Looney back, and he wasn't 100%, even though they just needed him because he is a much undervalued player in terms of what he's capable of doing defensively and on the rebounding side for the Warriors. And we saw that in this postseason in particular. Klay wasn't 100%, but he moved a lot better than I expected him to. This team's just battered and beaten. The Raptors are healthier. They're deeper. And Kawhi Leonard's the best player in the world. Kevin Durant's your only argument, and I've spent plenty of time laying that case out. But Kawhi's about to bring them a championship as a mercenary. And I'm telling you, he should stay in Toronto because he will be a national hero. All of Canada. If you're a Canadian, you're probably a Raptors fan. The Clippers can't offer that. They're a secondary team in L.A. Why would you leave Toronto? You're a legend. Stay there. You've got talent around you. You're proving you can win right now. Kawhi's a different cat. Toronto's a different kind of market, but they're a great fan base. Stay there. He's about to be a champion, though. Lincoln Kennedy, Anthony Gargano coming up with the fellas. Love those guys. We'll see you tomorrow.